Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
Time for the Rick Smith Show.
I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!
I don't want to abolish government. I simply want to reduce it to the size where I can drag it into the bathroom and drown in the bathtub.
You bet I cut the taxes at the top.
How dare you? How dare you? Go ahead. Make my day.
The Rick Smith Show starts now.
Welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks for being here. Tonight on the big program, we're going to be talking with Andy Hoover, legislative director from the Pennsylvania ACLU. Evidently, there's some stuff going through Monday, the voter ID bill. Here today, tomorrow, if you're arrested, they're going to collect your DNA. And then they're going to put it in a bank. I think I have a problem with that. I think I have a problem. If you're convicted of something serious, I can understand it then. But what happened to innocent until proven guilty? So we'll talk to Andy about that. Also, Jennifer Dye, she's going to be your Dane County Board candidate and activist. A couple of arrests in Wisconsin with this recall. Yesterday we talked about the guy who scribbled all over the petition, thought he was going to be a smart aleck. He was gonna deface it. They couldn't use it. Turns out, felony. Actually going to be charged with a felony. Could spend the next year and a half in jail. 2 years of supervised probation and a $10,000 fine. We find another person yesterday. What's going on out there in Wisconsin? I think what it is you hear too much of it. Well, I'm going to do this or I'm going to do that. And people think, oh, hey, I can do that. And then they catch themselves in a world of trouble. In the third hour, Jerome Wilson, one of the folks who spent the week at Take Back the Capitol, going to give us a wrap-up of what went on in Washington, D.C. this week, as the stories of occupying congressional offices and all of the rallies and all of the activism that went on there. So it'll be interesting to talk to Jerome. Your calls also 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. So good news out of the Department of Commerce. I know everyone's going to be really excited to find out that we're getting back on track. The economy's getting back on track. Our trade deficit, it went down. It went down to $43.5 billion in the month of October. That's a drop of about $700 million from $44.2 billion. Problem? Our trade deficit with China, the same, $28.1 billion. And again, you know, we keep talking about trade, we keep talking about jobs, we keep talking about how do you get the economy going? Maybe look at China. If you go back to 2001 and you look at the trade deficit that we've had simply with China, since the year 2001, you kind of go, we're screwing ourselves and in the worst way, and it's getting worse and worse and worse. Right now, we're at about $245 billion of a trade deficit with the Chinese. Last year, a record year, $273 billion. So if we work really hard, well, maybe not even all that hard at all. 28, 28, 45. That'll take us well over 300 billion. So we're gonna go over 300 billion. And I was gonna say, you know, if we had a really good Christmas, we could do it because the Chinese really are depending on us. So if we, you know, we went to the stores, we bought a bunch of cheap, you know, stuff from China, it would really help. But the more I'm thinking about it, to be honest, we don't really need to try that hard. That we will break 300 billion. And then what will it be next year? And what will it be the year after? You go back to 2001, we had an $83 billion trade deficit with China. And it has gotten worse and worse and worse every year up until 2008 when the bottom fell out of the economy. And then it only got slightly better and then right back to where it belongs. Getting worse. So that one little hiccup, and now we're basically handing the country over. And I love hearing all these people talk about, oh, we got to worry about the deficit. Oh, the deficit. The deficit I'm worried about is our trade deficit. That means jobs. The more stuff that we buy from them than they buy from us means we're losing jobs. I think that's pretty simply put. I don't know that you can really put it any other way. And at a time when Republicans are talking about scaling back and cutting funding for virtually every program and cutting spending, wouldn't you think they would be proposing trade policies? Wouldn't you think they'd be proposing ways to increase our exports? All they keep talking about is how we're going to bring things here. Let's deregulate and hope that jobs come. It's not happening. You're never going to compete with the Chinese by racing to the bottom. That is not going to happen. We need to do things a little smarter. If the Chinese want to sell things here in the U.S., maybe we should do what the Chinese do and say, well, if you want to come into our market, you're going to have an American sponsor. They're going to own 51% of your company. You're going to have to transfer all of your technology, all of your patents, all of your information over to us. And then you can exploit our workers. Then you can exploit our markets. We seem to be the only ones dumb enough to say, no, come on, bring in all your stuff. Come on, bring it in. And we're going to deregulate. We're going to cut funding to the people who are supposed to be overseeing those imports so that, you know, if the toothpaste has a little antifreeze in it, well, it might, you know, keep you from freezing, I guess. If you want to bring dog food in with melamine in it, well, you know, we got too many dogs anyway. I guess that's the thought. You know, you want to bring rancid fish in? All right, well, we'll do that too. Because we've seen report after report after report. The few things that we do catch at the border and ship back to them, they only turn around and send it back to us again anyway. Because they know getting into this country with cheap goods, with tainted goods is really very easy. Really very easy. So I say, you know, in the new year, maybe we resolve to buying American. Maybe this holiday season, we resolve to buying things made domestically, preferably locally. Wouldn't that be a good idea? Just a quick thought, because the job you may save may be your own. I don't know if you saw this in the paper yesterday, but it caught my attention, and I we can't sell off the Turnpike, I guess. The interest rates are so low, the paybacks are gonna be so long into the future, no investors are going to want to buy the Turnpike. So they decided that a study should be done. And the study would be done to see how they could make it a little more profitable, what they should be doing. And the idea being, if we could just put all electronic tolling on the Turnpike, they'd save a whole boatload of money. Because we have all this excess amount of users. If we could just get everybody who uses the Turnpike to use the easy pass, we'd collect a whole boatload of money. And I started thinking about this. I'm going, you know, this is the American future. This is where we're going into the future. You know, because I used to have this pledge. And I had to break my pledge the other day. We went to the local supermarket after 11 o'clock where the cashier is not allowed to ring me up anymore. I have to go through the self-serve aisle and I have to ring my own stuff up. And normally I don't. If it's something for me, if it's just a food item, I don't care. But the other night I had to. Kids were sick. Mom's sick. Had to get some medicine, so I had to go through. Granted, I screwed it up, and the girl had to come over and do it anyway. But still, I had to break the pledge to go over to it in the first place, which I'm not a fan of. I think there should be a cashier behind there. I want workers doing their jobs, just like at the toll booths. I want people doing their jobs. But I started thinking. In conservative world, which is what this is taking us to, where everything's automated and there are no workers. Granted, well, none of us will have any money, but there are no workers and there are no jobs. Everything's automated. And I was thinking, I can't wait to go to the restaurant where I take my own order, I cook my own food, I serve myself, then I take the dishes away and I wash them and I put them away and I pay the bill to myself and I leave. I can't wait for that day that the restaurants will be that kind of self-serve. And I thought about it. We've already got that. It's called home. And if that were the case, we could just stay home and feed ourselves that way. And I go, well, that's probably not a good idea. But I've gotten to the point to where they want to automate so much that it's almost like, why do I want to do it? I mean, like banking. I make it a point to go in and do my banking because those are jobs. And now I'm going to make it a point, you know, occasionally I would take the easy pass because it is, it's simple through. Now I'm no more easy pass for me. And I'm going to get screwed, and I know I'm going to get screwed. I'm going to have to pay the extra, which I think is an absolute travesty. And I think that eventually people have to fight back against this. I know, Rick, it's technology, we're moving forward. Yeah. How far forward do we move till we're all standing on the street starving? How far forward do we move to where none of us have jobs? Kind of a thought. And while it may seem like, this is much easier and it's much cheaper, what does that mean for those workers? Because that's where the savings is going to be. They say, we're going to save a boatload of money. Well, where are you going to save it from? Oh, we're going to fire all those workers. We won't have to pay health care. We won't have to pay pensions. We don't have to pay wages or workman's comp. Or we don't have to pay any of that stuff. We can just collect profit. And I thought, wow, what a great corporate idea. Our state is running like a corporation, run by people who are business friendly. And when we do this, if we do fire all those workers, will it then be enticing enough for the big investors to come in and buy up our turnpike, since there are no workers and there are no people you have to worry about? I sure hope not. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Your thoughts, questions, comments, right back after this. Stick around.
It's all about the children, even after they're born. Rick Smith.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. Union-represented podiatrists are fighting for fairness in the way they're paid for podiatric care. It's an issue that impacts access to podiatric care for working people who often work physical jobs and therefore need more foot care. OPEIU Guild 45 President Dr. John Mariachi.
The OPIU, we were the first ones that started independent union or guild to represent physicians, and I believe that the clout and the legislative exposure of having a union behind us gives us some strength and ability to get our thoughts to the table.
OPEIU podiatrists want equal treatment and respect when it comes to the way the managed care health system treats them. OPEIU supports proposed legislation in Congress that would make it easier for low-income people to get foot care under Medicaid. OPEIU President Mike Goodwin says the bill, H.R. 3364, would also save the government money through preventative care. Americans United for Change has launched the Romney Gecko 2012 presidential ticket with a video called Morning on Wall Street. Spokesperson Lauren Wiener.
Romney has a long history of job killing in the private sector, and we think that that needs a lot of attention, and so we're going to try to do that with this campaign.
You can check out the Greed is Good Romney Gecko ticket at romneygecko.com.
And under the leadership of Mitt Romney and Gordon Gekko, the 1% will be richer, stronger, and better off. Even if the rest of us are unemployed, homeless, and hungry. It's morning again on Wall Street.
The Obama administration is the first to use federal spending to apply affirmative action to help workers with disabilities. Jesse Russell has more.
The Obama administration is seeking to increase the number of disabled people receiving jobs through federal contracts. The unemployment rate for disabled workers is substantially higher than the national average at 13%. The goal of the new administration rule would be to see disabled workers accounting for 7% of the employees hired by federal contractors. This would be the first time an administration has used federal spending to apply affirmative action for individuals with disabilities. The rule would place specific requirements on contractors that would encourage an increased hiring of workers with disabilities. However, the rule does not require contractors meet quotas. Before the rule is approved, it will be open for public comment for 60 days. Depending on the results of those comments, it could be activated as early as February.
This newscast made possible in part through underwriting from the AFL-CIO and by Ulico, the Union Labor Life Insurance Company. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
There is no America. There is no democracy. There is only IBM and ITT and AT&T and DuPont, Dow, Union Carbide, and Exxon. Those are the nations of the world today.
Well, that's a scary thought, but you know, the sad reality is it's true. These big multinationals, they have more say over what happens in our country than we do. Sad stuff. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. Robert Franks was writing over at the Wall Street Journal, and he pointed to a study by a guy named Ronald Schmidt of the William E. Simon Graduate School of Business Administration at the University of Rochester. And he's looking at this William Simon's looking at this CBO report that I've talked about numerous times. Where they've said that the top 1% from 1979 to 2007 gained after-tax in their pocket 275%. You and I, most people, got about 40%. The people in the bottom got about 18%. Nowhere close to keeping up with inflation. Well, Schmidt's study said that most of the CBO's cited growth in inequality actually happened between 1979 and 1986. So you look at this and you go, well, what happened? 1986, what was going on from 79 to 86? What went on during that period? Oh, yeah, Ronnie. He goes on to write, Schmidt, in his piece, any increase in inequality during the 2000s was wiped out by the current recession. So you actually saw incomes at the top fall rather than in 2009 as well. He says, in fact, there was a marked decline in the income inequality over the entire decade of the 2000s. We were already completely apart. The difference is as my friend Horace told me at the store the other night, we were always getting screwed. It's just that we still had jobs to go to and we could get by. He goes on to say he should note that the post-2009 data may tell a different story. He says income inequality may have dipped temporarily in 2009, but rebounded full force in 2010 and 11. Inequality may actually be higher now, he is saying, than it was in 2007. So because of the recession, and again, I'm not a gambling man, but I put my last dollar down on the fact that I can almost guarantee you things are more unequal now than they were in 2007. And the gulf between those who have and those who do not is now wider than it was even then. You know, he looks at this and he says, look, you know, we've got some serious problems. And he asked the question, does rising inequality does that make for a good reason to raise taxes on the rich? And I say, well, absolutely. That's part of the whole thing. If you go back to 86, what happened up to that point? Well, supply-side voodoo Reaganomics. We were in the heart of it. We had completely redistributed the income in this country. We have completely re-sliced the pie. And I asked my Tea Party friends, where were you during those during that period? When you were worried, because you seem to be worried about under Obama redistribution of wealth, what happened during the Reagan years? So Obama gave a speech the other day, and, you know, I just wanted to play a couple of quick clips out of it because, you know, the guy's finally, I understand this is campaign Obama. I'm hoping campaign Obama turns into governing Obama, and this actually is, you know, kind of what we start looking towards.
Now, just as there was in Teddy Roosevelt's time, there's a certain crowd in Washington who for the last few decades have said, let's respond to this economic challenge with the same old tune. The market will take care of everything, they tell us. If we just cut more regulations and cut more taxes, especially for the wealthy, our economy will grow stronger. Sure, they say, there will be winners and losers, but if the winners do really well, then jobs and prosperity will eventually trickle down to everybody else. And, they argue, even if prosperity doesn't trickle down, well, that's the price of liberty.
And that is what they argue. But government shouldn't pick winners and losers if you hear the current Republicans, their talking point. Now, think about trickle-down Reaganomics. Think about trickle-me-down Ronnie. If we gave everything to the top, if we had a billionaire class of extraordinarily wealthy people, their benevolence and their goodwill and their appetite for more would create jobs. And I ask you, has that happened? I mean, can you really look at this and say it has worked? Well, Obama goes on and says,
now, it's a simple theory. And we have to admit, it's one that speaks to our rugged individualism and our healthy skepticism of too much government. That's in America's DNA. And that theory fits well on a bumper sticker. But here's the problem. It doesn't work. It has never worked. It didn't work when it was tried in the decade before the Great Depression. It's not what led to the incredible post-war booms of the 50s and 60s. And it didn't work when we tried it during the last decade.
Nope, not at all. And in fact, Obama's dead spot on, right? Something we've been talking about for the longest time. And the trickle-down policies put in place by the Reagan administration haven't brought prosperity to you or me, not to the middle class, not to the working class. If anything, they've made the prosperity of the very top the key to their platforms. Because that's who's funding their campaigns. That's who's putting money in their pocket. So the question then becomes is, what has this brought us? You know, it's brought us this massive gulf between Bill Gates and me, this massive gulf between the folks who have and those who don't. You know, I watched this thing on Current TV last night. It was called The Two Americas. And they sent their cameras out to follow two families, one doing wildly well, living the ultimate high life. And they only lived 40 miles apart from each other in Houston. One living the high life, the best of everything, doing the whole charity ball thing, you know, just fantastic and great for them. And then one, you know, your typical blue collar, God fearing, rock rib, Republican, working class guy. High school graduate, went to work building houses, worked his way up, did the hard work. And got to a place where he was making a fantastic wage. The economy bottomed out. He's broke. Nobody will hire him. Nobody will talk to him. And during the program, they show these people who they've got their list of bills that, well, you know, we're not going to be able to pay the $400 for the electric bill. We're not going to be able to pay this, the water bill. We're not going to be able to pay the phone bill. We don't have money for this. All we're getting is $200 a week from unemployment, and that's going to go to pay the entire, all of it, to pay the rent. And they go to ask for charity from one of the, you know, the Christian groups who could only give them $75, and they needed like $250. And the part that caught my attention, and again, it's this thing that just drives me absolutely nuts. They're watching the Republican debates. And I guess what it is people look at themselves a little differently than they look at everyone else. They look at themselves, if they're collecting unemployment or food stamps or any of those things, and, hey, I need it. I'm a hard worker. I just need this short-term thing. But everybody else, they're all bums and they're all lazy and stupid and not trying as hard as I am. And that's what I got from this guy. You know, he's watching Gingrich talk about, you know, Obama being the food stamp president, and he wants to be the paycheck president, and we shouldn't be giving handouts to people because, you know, we need people to work, so, you know, no food stamps, no unemployment, all this stuff. And the guy in the program goes, I agree with him. And the woman behind the camera goes, but if you vote for him, aren't you voting against your best, your own economic interest? Because you kind of are collecting food stamps, and you kind of are collecting unemployment. And he says, well, yeah, I guess you could see it that way, he says. But if the government didn't do it, and I don't want the government doing it, somebody else would. And I just sat there with my mouth gaping open going, I can't believe you just said that. Because history has shown us that nobody else will in times of crisis. History has shown us that it's not going to happen. Understand. Unemployment was not for the workers. Unemployment was never set up to help the workers. Unemployment was set up to help small businesses in every community by putting money in people's pockets. That's what it was set up for. Just like workmen's compensation was never set up to protect the workers. Didn't care about them. Workers' comp was set up to protect the employers because they were getting sued every time someone got hurt. So stop thinking about things in terms of, oh, well, you know, these are a benefit for me. No, these things are to benefit business. And the problem in our economy today is there aren't many small businesses that rely on people having money. It's all multinationals. It's all, if the power company is going to shut off your lights, they're a massive company. One or two people aren't going to matter to them. So I look at this, and it's just mind-blowing to me. That there are people who are in that situation go, oh, I'm a hard worker and I'm going to be the one, but everybody else is cheating the system. It seems kind of stupid to me. And I don't know that it gets any better.
Well, I mean, it doesn't just go to regular workers, Rick. I've talked to people who are, you know, office holders who, when we talked about, and this is a little bit different, but it's the same. We talked about health care. You know, their philosophy was, you know, let the churches provide it.
And I'm okay with that. But make
you
they
can be
didn't.
Okay with it, but they're not. Well, first of all, they don't have. When you talk about health care, when you talk about the massive problem we have, Rick, they might be able to take care of one or two, but on a whole, even if you have a big congregation, you probably wouldn't be able to take care of that entire congregation when you're talking about health care. That can get very expensive.
Yep. Well, I mean, it's what this guy did. He went to some ministry, and the ministry people said, we can only help you once a year, and it's only for $75. And I'm going, $75? And they only helped the first 10 people. And I'm going, right there illustrates exactly what I'm talking about. The fact of the matter is if we the people, us, all of us together, don't say that we're going to have a safety net, no one else is going to do it. The churches aren't magically going to do it. It's not going to happen. There's no way you're going to turn $1 into hundreds. Jesus turned one loaf of bread into a whole bunch and one fish into a whole bunch. Sure, I get that. He's not going to be turning a dollar into a whole. Not going to happen. Let's go to the phone lines. Ike on line one. How you doing tonight, Ike?
Well, I figured since you were talking about me, I might as well call in.
What's on your mind?
Well, construction worker, 99-weeker. I'm out,
Yeah, but here's the difference, Ike. You get it. This guy just kind of brain dead, and I'm just sitting here. I can't imagine being in that position where you're talking about. At one point, he was actually talking about having his wife sell her wedding ring so that they could keep the lights on.
Dude, I've sold plasma. You know, I've carried water in my house from the faucet next door from the kind neighbor so I could flush my toilets. Okay? You guys don't know how far down these people are, you know, where we're at. And I keep trying, I've been trying to tell people ever since the days of Reagan, I've warned them and warned them and warned them. And they don't want to listen. They don't want to believe it. They all keep whistling like right by the graveyard. You know, if it ain't me, then hey, I'm all good. You know, like that rich pit people you're talking about or whoever. You know, you got food in your belly. You got food in your fridge.
Yep.
You got gas in your car. You got a job. You think you're all that in a bag of chips. And you know what? You ain't nothing. You know, and I still to this day, I'll never forget that bumper sticker. It said a person that votes for a working man that votes for a Republican is like a chicken that votes for Colonel Sanders. They're going to have you for lunch, pal. Yeah.
Eventually you're on the menu. And you know, yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, I think people only wake up when it affects them directly. And I'm looking at this guy. My whole world view is being shattered because it's in his best interest to make sure that we have a strong, generous unemployment benefits to support his family and strong, generous food stamp programs so that he can actually literally feed his family. And he's sitting there watching Newt Gingrich saying, he's right, we shouldn't have these handout programs.
And the thing is this, dude. You know, listen, you got to hand it to the Republicans, Roger Ailes, Murdoch, you know, the whole Kabul, Rush Limbaugh, Sean Hannity, this big network that they've built.
Yes, they have.
And I warned the Democrats before they ever even got on the air. I tried to tell them, and they didn't listen. Dude, you've let them take over. They've got a propaganda arm that is akin to none. They are the best at what they do.
Yes, they are.
And that's what's driving this. And y'all, you know, trust me, brother, if there would have been competition to start with, and if somebody was able to get up there and go toe-to-toe, and they could have stopped this before it got started, which, by the way, a lot of it broke loose when Newt Gingrich was Speaker of the House. You know, they keep talking about this ethics violation. Well, you know, one of the big ones was, if he made a book deal and got a bunch of money from Rupert Murdoch when the telecommunications bill was going through.
Yeah, but that's at the end of the day, I don't. You can blame who you want. I still blame Bill Clinton for that.
Well, you know, I'll be honest with you. It opened up the net. It opened up wireless. It opened up a bunch of things. But it had some bad side to it, too. And, yeah, I blame him for signing NAFTA. But you can only shut the government down so many times in budget disputes and all the other stuff. People don't remember, but one of the times he shut it down was the argument over NAFTA when we were trying to get, you know, the end of the trade deal, that they would get worker protection, they would get the right to unionize, they would get better wages in Mexico, and the Republicans fought us off to a standstill, and we had to compromise.
Yeah, they wanted
don't remember that.
They wanted the bill, they wanted the trade agreement that they negotiated before Clinton beat HW.
Correct. And that's why, you know what, and then why, you know, now that you mentioned that, and that's the other point. Look, time for compromise is over. That's the one thing I agree with with the Republicans. There is no more compromise. And this president that just came out and he was making these speeches, the next place he needs to go to where FDR made his speech. And let's really bring it full circle here and say, okay, what do you want? Hey, you poor little redneck. You don't want food stamps? Fine. Turn them in. Tune it out. Forget about it. We're going to put you on your own bootstraps and see how you do. Or you want to go down that road? Let's go down that road. Because I tell you what, it is time. This has come to a head. And you know what? You want to prove me wrong? You want to make a liar out of me? Because I ain't been wrong yet. But you know what? You want to prove me wrong? I beg you, prove me wrong. Because I guarantee you one thing. If you really did dry up all these safety nets, there'd be blood in the streets, and you're lucky it ain't already there. And that's what these boys, if they're dancing on the head of a pin and they don't realize it, if they keep pushing, they're going to have blood in the streets. That's where it's going.
Yeah, I hope that is not the case. But sadly, I think people, when it gets to that point, when things get bad enough.
If you're carrying 5-gallon buckets of water in your house to flush your toilet, you can't find a job because hose A, hose B, hose C, anybody that worked for less, and legal or illegal, will take your job and burn you, and the employer continues to make a killing. You know what? See, I'm seeing this on a different level. This ain't got nothing to do with Wall Street. 401k, health insurance, all this crap you people talk about. I ain't got none of that. You know what I got? I got me in the street and whoever's on the street, and I got to push for a job. And my God, they've used these people. They flooded our country. They flooded the labor market. And they told Americans, decent, honest veterans like me, screw you. We don't care. If you can't work for $5 an hour, screw you. We'll get somebody from Guatemala that'll do it.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's what our trade deals have done. That's what we've done.
And guess what? Welcome to my world. All you people out there. Oh, well, I might have a job tomorrow. I don't have a job. I ain't got no health care. I got health care. You know what? I've never had none of that. I warned all y'all about this. I've been talking about this since Reagan, and I tried to let y'all know. And no. Well, guess what? You're a little piss-ant construction worker. We don't care about you. Well, guess what? Now they're coming for your butt, and you're crying like little girls. I've been living with this crap for 30 years.
Which,
and I hope you get a snoop bowl of it until you stand up and do something about it.
There you go. There you go. I got to take a break here, Ike. I appreciate
it. Brother, I appreciate you letting me vent. I'm sorry, but I'm passionate, dude.
No, no,
we
love
need
it.
To get up off our ass.
I'm right there with you. Love the passion, Ike. Thanks so much.
Thank you, brother.
Again, it takes us back to what the guy said. 79 to 86. We've just been living with it ever since. Quick break. Right back after this. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. Right back.
The Rick Smith Show, changing America for the better.
Mea culpa. I misspoke. My bad. I stand corrected. In past commentaries, I have called Newt Gingrich a lobbyist. Apparently, he hates that tag, even though he has indeed gotten very wealthy by taking big bucks from such special interest outfits as IBM, AstraZeneca, Microsoft, and Siemens in exchange for helping them get favors from federal and state governments. But Gingrich, his lawyers, and staff adamantly insist that it's rude and crude to call him a lobbyist. No, no, they bark. The Newt is a visionary. Major corporations, they explain, pay up to $200,000 a year to the corrupt former House Speaker's Policy Center for the sheer privilege of bathing in the soothing enlightenment of Newt's transformative vision. Also, as the man himself constantly reminds everyone, he has a Ph. by God D, so he's Dr. Newt, the certified visionary. Yet, the center's own sales pitch to lure potential corporate clients makes crystal clear that the visionary services he offers entail doing what, excuse the term, lobbyists do. For example, the center brags that Newt has, quote, contacts at the highest levels of government, and that being a paying customer, quote, increases your channels of input to decision makers. One corporate chieftain who hired the well-connected Washington insider for $7,500 a month plus stock options says that Gingrich, quote, made it very clear to us that he does not lobby, but that he could direct us to the right places in Washington. So, Mr. Do Not Call Me a Lobbyist is, in fact, selling his government contacts and peddling his political influence. But he does not lobby. Instead, he directs, makes calls, arranges meetings, opens doors, and, of course, he has visions. This is Jim Hightower saying so. We'll call Newt what he is, a Washington influence peddler.
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's populist take on what the powers that be are up to. Find out more at HightowerLowdown.org.
Waving the flag of freedom for people, not corporations. Rick Smith.
Rick, 1-888-520-7425. check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. You know, again, Obama's right about this whole trickle-down thing. Never has, never will work. Understand, if you give everything to the top, they want more. It never ends. The pockets never fall. They never fill up. Never. The idea, I guess, is once their pockets are full enough, you know, some things overflow. If you give them so much that it's overflowing, then you and I at the bottom, we can fight for what falls out of their pockets. Problem is the pockets are never full. Never happens. And if you go back to 1986, which is kind of an interesting year that this Schmidt guy figured this out, from 79 to 86 is when the mass of the inequality happened. 86 is an interesting year. Because you look at the tax reform bill of 86. What did that do? All you folks who were collecting unemployment checks, thanks to that, thanks to Ronnie's signature on that bill, you are paying taxes on your unemployment. Didn't have to beforehand, but now got to pay taxes on it. So what have the Republicans brought us? I mean, in November of 2010, they said, you know, the crisis is so bad, we're laser-like focus, jobs, jobs, jobs. What have they brought us? Really all of the same stuff that got us into this mess, the same ideas that got us into the mess that we're in, the same ideas that created this massive gulf. They say we have too much regulation. They say we have too much taxation, too much government. So we need to tear apart regulation / taxes and privatize, privatize, privatize. Earlier in the week, I talked about this guy, Clarence Otis. Clarence is the CEO of Darden Restaurants, Olive Garden, Red Lobster, Longhorn. He believes, and wrote very eloquently over at CNN, that the number one job killer for his company, regulation. And I talked about this the other day. I cannot imagine that being anywhere close to reality. I would think the number one job killer in his line of work is me not having a dollar in my pocket to go buy whatever it is you buy at Red Lobster or the overpriced steaks at Longhorn or the only decent thing on the menu at Olive Garden is the soup. So if Rick isn't going in the door buying the soup, what, nobody to serve. What are the workers going to do? I would think that's the job killer. But no, according to Mr. Otis, it's those regulations. Oh, gee, it's those regulations. The regulations are the reason I don't have any money to go in there and buy the soup and tip the waitress. Now I get it. I'm starting to come into focus for me. And they say, oh, we need to cut more taxes. We need to cut more taxes. We need to get rid of that estate tax. We need to bring back that money that these big corporations have stashed overseas, repatriate it at a lower rate. Oh, yeah. So that the few can have more. And I look at this story about the Walton family, the six of them, who in 2007 controlled almost $70 billion. Or, think about this, $70 billion, or as much wealth as the bottom 100 million. Six people we can sit around a room and have a conversation with, just around a small table, have the same wealth as the bottom 100 million. And they're saying, when the new numbers come out, because they don't have the accurate numbers for 2010 yet. But they're saying when the new numbers come out, it's likely to grow even larger. They're thinking almost 40%. And, you know, I gotta be honest, you know, do they not get extra cheese on their Whopper? Is that the reason we need to give them more? And what bothers me is they take all this money that we've given them by not taxing them. And they've pushed for legislation to cut more taxes. They've pushed for more legislation to cut the estate tax, the inheritance tax, and to push policies that do what? well, that allow Walmart to be the largest employer in the country. And I have to be honest, I was reading the article, and it was hysterical, some of the comments at the bottom, that we should be grateful to Walmart. And this was beautiful. We should be grateful to Walmart because, well, they take low-skill people, and they give them good-paying jobs. And they teach them skills like showing up on time. And I'm going, really? You believe that? And that we should be, as a country, grateful for them for doing this. Not that they haven't completely destroyed the country, and not that they haven't completely. I think their stores are fantastic. I think they've done all of the business smart things that you do in a scenario where you can then monopolize. But I have a problem with the way it's gone about, because we've allowed them to get too big, and we need the next generation of Teddy Roosevelt to come in and say, too big, trust bust, break them up.
No, the problem is they haven't even created middle-class jobs. I mean, the average wage at the Walmart store is so low that the vast majority of their employees can't afford their very mediocre, high-priced health care, which they don't tell you. Most of their employees make less than $10 an hour.
So you got all the Walmart, the six of these, back in 2007, more than 30% of the folks here in the country. Mitt Romney was being interviewed, and you got to love Mitt. You got to love his honesty. He was being interviewed by one of the editorial boards, and he had this to say about his tax idea. You got to give him credit, honest.
I'll mention one more. The speaker I think everybody, by the way, I'm trying to think if there's anyone on the stage besides me that hasn't adopted the idea that there should be no tax on interest, dividends, and capital gains. My own calculation is that if that were the case, for anybody, no tax on interest, dividends, and capital gains, I would have paid no taxes in the last 10 years. Because all my income is from interest, dividends, and capital gains.
So when you hear them talking about, well, you know, we need to cut that capital gains. Who are we talking about? Talking about people like Mitt. And the folks over at the Center for Tax Justice, they did an analysis of Romney's tax bill and what he would have paid in 2010, according to their calculations. And he would have paid 14% tax. So I ask you, you know, when you take a look at it, what'd you pay? What did you pay? 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Thoughts, questions, comments? This is a good system. It's the way we go. Should we zero out capital gains? Should Mitt pay nothing? And you'll be happy to pay the freight, right? Back after this.
Uncovering the con in conservatism. Rick Smith.
For 75 years, AFSCME has protected basic workers' rights. A living wage, health benefits, safe working conditions, these aren't privileges to be taken away, they're rights to be protected. This is Dave Filman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13. Public services and workers' rights are under attack like never before. But the Main Street movement is pulling together. Nurses, firefighters, cops, teachers, students, and neighbors. Ordinary Americans are fighting back and making history. From victories in Wisconsin, Ohio, and right here in Pennsylvania, AFSCME was there. AFSCME will always be there. Coming after workers and their unions? It's a shameful agenda for Wall Street politicians, but AFSCME's been in this fight for 75 years. We're not about to stop now. Join the Main Street movement at AFSCME13.org. And from all of us at AFSCME, happy holidays.
Me, Council 13 members, did you know that you have voluntary benefits available to you that you can pay for through the ease of payroll deduction? AFSCME Council 13 offers a voluntary benefits package to help provide money when you or a covered family member incurs one of these life events, accidents, critical illness, disability, or death. No one can avoid life's unfortunate situations. However, AFSCME Council 13 has provided you with the opportunity to ease the financial burden on your family by preparing now. Find out more about Trustmark's voluntary benefits. BBS Benefit Solutions can help you get the security you need. Call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. Again, call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. I gotta tell you, I am so depressed. I miss Herman Cain. I mean, you know, this song now really kind of has a new meaning for me. You know, getting on board the Herman Cain train, you know, especially with all of the allegations of him, well, doing what it is he was doing. And I'm not condemning him for it. I'm just saying, when you're hypocritical about things, they tend to have life tends to have a way of straightening you out. So when you're out there saying you're doing one thing and you're really doing something else, eventually it turns around on you. So I'm hoping to see the Herman Cain train again, because I think he's a fairly entertaining guy. But I think just like World Championship Wrestling, I think he got thrown out of the ring. Anyway, yesterday there was a protest around the state, really I think around the country, as you had this Take Back the Capitol week of action. There were planned actions all around the country where people were going to their representatives saying, hey, you need to pass the unemployment extension. You need to pass the payroll tax break for middle-class workers. And here in Harrisburg, there were 99 Santa Clauses that came out to Pat Toomey's office, and they brought him coal. To put it, and that was candy coal, because it was the first question I asked: is it clean coal? And they said yes, it's candy coal. And they you know, they got him, you know, a big bag of coal for Christmas, because they deemed him to be naughty, because evidently he doesn't really seem all that interested in passing an extended unemployment benefits package or the payroll tax cuts. But the Republicans have come up with a grand idea. What they're going to do is they're going to tie it in with the Keystone XL. They're going to tie it, well, basically their wish list. They're going to tie it in with all the things that they've been looking to get out of it. The Spectrum sale. They want changes to Medicare and other health provisions. They think they're going to get money out of Freddie and Fannie Mac. They want to change it, Social Security, get about $3 billion out of that. And it means testing for unemployment and food stamps, which I'm completely against. And of course, the creme de la creme, the cherry on the top, the right wing wet dream. You know, the solution that you wake up in with the morning, as Red Fox said, when teenage boy go to bed with sex problem on mind, he wakes up with solution on hand. So the solution on hand being freezing federal workers' pay. If we could only do that, and then we could change the federal workers' retirement benefits and take some other health care away, boy, we could really do something. And in return, we'll give you a year's extension on the tax cut and on the other thing that you want, that other thing. But you got to give them credit. They know what they want, and they're willing, regardless of any of their past rhetoric, they're willing to go at it. Now, the CBO is saying that what they've proposed is going to cost an additional $25.3 billion. They're going to add that on top of the deficit. So much for their balanced budget amendment. Understand, they're proposing a piece of legislation that would violate their own balanced budget amendment. I am a fiscal conservative. I say we absolutely help people, like the guy in that TV show who's struggling to feed the kids, struggling to keep the lights on, struggling to maintain an existence. We help them. But you know what we do? We pay for it. And how we pay for it? As we ask the Donald Trumps of the world, who evidently doing wildly well, We asked the top 1%. We asked the Walmart family. Chip a little bit in. Because when that guy does well, he gets back on his feet, he is going to help the economy. But I love that. I mean, they're going to propose a piece of legislation that violates their own balanced budget amendment. Sometimes you got to wonder. You got to wonder because hypocrite. That's the only word that keeps popping to my mind. Now, on the unemployment side, what they've proposed doing is they want to limit the number of weeks from 99 down to 59. Going to cut that down, and they also want to start drug testing. The guy who's the chairman of the House Ways and Means Committee, Republican from Michigan, Dave Camp, he has tucked into the proposal a mandatory drug testing provision. But I guess it's not mandatory for all the states. I guess the states are going to have an option, however they're going to do it, even though, I mean, this testing has been ruled unconstitutional time and time again. Not going to stop them, is it?
No, it's political theater. It's political theater. I mean, we've said this time and time and time again. The Republicans are more disciplined, and they keep their people in line. As much as we hate what they stand for, the Democrats haven't been able to stop it. But I think what's going to have to happen. One of these times, the Democrats are going to have to say, you know, we're going to risk shutting down government. We're gonna say this is it. We are not gonna acquiesce to your blackmail. And I really wonder, Rick, if they have the kahunas.
Well, and they're saying they're gonna stand their ground on this.
They say they are.
But the history has shown us they are more than willing to cave. And you look at the numbers. I mean, and again, understand what unemployment insurance has been. Unemployment to me has been that, and food stamps as well. Is that thing that stopped our economy from complete and total collapse. Because as I said earlier, those programs weren't for the people. Those were for the businesses. Understand that unemployment wasn't because some guy lost his job. Unemployment was because a lot of people lost their jobs, and communities needed to have money to continue to operate. You needed to have cash in the local economy to keep it active. And this, you know, I go back to this thing I watched last night in Houston. And, you know, they were showing, you know, pictures of all the people across the street. Here comes the electric company going to shut their electric off. And there's the water company down there going to shut the water off. And there's down there going to, and they're worried that, hey, are they coming to our house today? So it wasn't just this one family. It was the entire community. And that's what's going on around this country. And that's what unemployment has saved. So you can hear the right wing complaining, oh, their people are too lazy to work. No. In fact, this show that I watch, and I tell people, go look at it. Go find it. Vanguard, The Two Americas. It was on Current TV. I'm sure it's online somewhere. You might be able to find it. But this guy was out there. His wife was out there. They were interviewing time and time again. And you know what they got back? Nothing. Nobody responded. Nobody said, hey, you didn't get the job. You could see the people coming out of the interview. I did great. I killed. They really liked me. They said they'll call me on Monday. Monday comes, gone. Nothing. Tuesday, nothing. And, you know, it's easy to say, well, if I were in that position, I would do something different. No, you wouldn't. Because I remember being in that interview, and never getting a response stage years ago. And I can't imagine how bad it is today. I'm going to take a quick break. We're going to come back with Andy Hoover from the Pennsylvania ACLU. Again, I guess on Monday, the voter ID going to go through. They're going to look at that. And also this DNA bill. I got to find out about this. Back after this.
In an ocean of red, Rick Smith. It's the Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham.
Union-represented podiatrists are fighting for fairness in the way they're paid for podiatric care. It's an issue that impacts access to podiatric care for working people who often work physical jobs and therefore need more foot care. OPEIU Guild 45 President Dr. John Mariachi.
The OPEIU, we were the first ones that started independent union or guild to represent physicians. And I believe that the clout and the legislative exposure of having a union behind us gives us some strength and ability to get our thoughts to the table.
OPEIU podiatrists want equal treatment and respect when it comes to the way the managed care health system treats them. OPEIU supports proposed legislation in Congress that would make it easier for low-income people to get foot care under Medicaid. OPEIU President Mike Goodwin says the bill, H.R. 3364, would also save the government money through preventative care. Americans United for Change has launched the Romney Gecko 2012 presidential ticket with a video called Morning on Wall Street. Spokesperson Lauren Wiener.
Romney has a long history of job killing in the private sector, and we think that that needs a lot of attention, and so we're going to try to do that with this campaign.
You can check out the Greed is Good Romney Gecko ticket at romneygecko.com.
And under the leadership of Mitt Romney and Gordon Gekko, the 1% will be richer, stronger, and better off. Even if the rest of us are unemployed, homeless, and hungry. It's morning again on Wall Street.
The Obama administration is the first to use federal spending to apply affirmative action to help workers with disabilities. Jesse Russell has more.
The Obama administration is seeking to increase the number of disabled people receiving jobs through federal contracts. The unemployment rate for disabled workers is substantially higher than the national average at 13%. The goal of the new administration rule would be to see disabled workers accounting for 7% of the employees hired by federal contractors. This would be the first time an administration has used federal spending to apply affirmative action for individuals with disabilities. The rule would place specific requirements on contractors that would encourage an increased hiring of workers with disabilities. However, the rule does not require contractors meet quotas. Before the rule is approved, it will be open for public comment for 60 days. Depending on the results of those comments, it could be activated as early as February.
This newscast made possible in part through underwriting from the AFL-CIO and by ULICO, the Union Labor Life Insurance Company. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Where family values are more than slogans. The Rick Smith Show.
It sounds like
back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. So civil rights advocates have secured a big sweeping victory in the battle to overturn Ohio's voter suppression bill that shortens the state's early voting period, bans in-person early voting on Sundays, and prohibits Board of Election folks from mailing out absentee ballots that voters request. According to the Ohio Secretary of State, John Houston, he says that Ohio voters have indeed submitted enough signatures, over 231,000, to suspend the law until Ohio voters can ratify or reject it in the November 2012 election. So again, the folks in Ohio basically turning back everything the Republicans and Kasich have done. If only we could do that here. On Monday, I understand the Senate here in Pennsylvania is going to be taking up the Daryl Metcalf voter ID bill, House Bill 934, that was passed back a couple of months ago. That's why I've asked Andy Hoover, legislative director of the Pennsylvania ACLU, to come out and talk to us about this and a couple other things. Andy, thanks for taking time for me.
Hey, Rick, no problem. Nice to talk with you again.
You know, when the Mad Cow bill passed, we had you on the program, and it was a travesty then. I'm kind of shocked that it's on the calendar in the Senate.
Somewhat. We're getting mixed messages, but I'm assuming it's on for Monday. The legislature's public website has it posted. There's a paid service called Pennsylvania Legislative Services that does not have it posted, but the people who run the public website couldn't have come up with that out of nowhere. So I'm sure that someone told them it's on the agenda, and we're assuming they're moving forward. But I can tell you senators have felt a lot of pressure. So like you, I'm mildly surprised that we're seeing this.
So let me ask you this, because, you know, the Republicans, November 2010, and I think I'm going to say this, you know, until 2012, they told us jobs, 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 laser-like focus on jobs. How is this going to create jobs?
Well, I can tell you it will create a lot of work for the poll workers. That much I can tell you. They don't get paid much, though. It does not create jobs, obviously. And funny that you bring that up, because I know this is not why you brought me on, but speaking of focusing on jobs, 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 next week the House is also going to vote on abortion restrictions. So the jobs agenda continues to apparently be stalled while the legislature deals with things like voter ID and abortion.
Well, I mean, on the abortion front, I can make the argument that it is a jobs bill. It's a cheap labor bill. We need cheap labor.
That's true. Good, fair point.
I mean, you know, if you remember, Tom DeLay was talking about, about abortion and his view on it. Listen to this.
If we had those 40 million children that were killed over the last 30 years, we wouldn't need the illegal immigrants to fill the jobs that they are doing today.
That's the hammer talking.
Right.
We just have all that cheap labor. We wouldn't need to bring those Mexicans in here, and we could probably understand them, too.
Yeah. I don't know where he gets that or where his analysis comes from, if he has some kind of sociology background, but I'm not buying it.
He's got some sociology problem, I'm sure.
Yeah.
But, you know, in looking at this voter ID bill, I mean, there's a lot to this that personally I think is just plain dumb. No one's shown me that we really have this big problem. We are seeing in Wisconsin a huge problem of people, tearing up recall petitions and scribbling all over recall to petitions, but not too many cases of people actually engaging in what this bill would stop.
No, in fact, when this was in the House, when House Bill 934 was in the House Democrats did compile the information from the Commission on Sentencing. Commission on Sentencing is a bipartisan commission of the legislature that tracks sentencing data. And they found that over 6 years, from 2004 to 2010, 19 million ballots had been cast in Pennsylvania, and there were 4 convictions for voter impersonation fraud. So obviously this is not a problem at all. But what is a problem to some people, I believe, is that people from the wrong communities happen to vote. Racial minorities, people living in poverty, seniors, people with disabilities, students, and there are people in the legislature who don't want them to vote, so this is a great way to stop them from voting.
Yeah, I remember Paul Rayrick saying, you know, hey, if we can only hold those votes down, make sure that those people don't vote, then we can win.
Right, those people, right, exactly. And actually Tom Corbett himself said we got to keep that vote down in Philadelphia. You remember that one right before the election last year. So, and Carol Achill, the Secretary of State, has been out there advocating for this. She was a party to a lawsuit that the ACLU filed in Chester County when she was a commissioner there. There was a squabble over the polling location for Lincoln University, and in response to students' request to move the polling place to Lincoln University, the county commissioners actually moved it further away. So the governor's own administration doesn't exactly have the best track record on voting rights.
Yeah, and again, I used to say it's like a thinly veiled attempt to hold people away from the voting polls, but there's no thin veil here. I mean, this is blatant.
Yes, you're absolutely right. I mean, this is obvious and blatant, and we've shown them the research that shows that, you know, a large percentage of Pennsylvanians do not have the government-issued ID required by the bill. Now, the secretary has been out there saying it's 1%. We think her research is completely bogus. But even if it's 1%, that's 96,000 people.
Yeah, but here's the thing. Nothing out of this administration I can take at face value. I mean, you look at the Department of Revenue said they were going to get, $106 million from the Marcellus Shale. They ended up getting 46.
Right.
We got some serious accounting problems or some just number problems.
Well, and to that end, the Pennsylvania Budget and Policy Center did an analysis that suggested that In the first year alone, voter ID will cost an additional $11 million in spending on elections. So we're at a time when the state government is trying to squeeze out every dime that it can, and yet we can find a way to spend $11 million that we really don't need to spend on voter ID.
So we're slashing education funding so that we can suppress the vote. Nice.
Exactly.
That's the way to go. Let's talk about the other thing I brought you on. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're here with Andy Hoover, Legislative Director of the Pennsylvania ACLU. The Senate Bill 775.
Right.
Help me here.
Sure.
If I'm arrested for something, felony, some misdemeanors, I have to submit to a DNA test. They're going to hold that.
Correct.
I haven't been convicted of anything, but they're going to collect this from me right when I'm arrested?
Correct. Under current law, a person who is convicted of a felony or a couple designated misdemeanors does have their DNA collected, and that DNA is then sent to the state police for collection in a database and to the FBI for their database. Under this bill, Senate Bill 775, it would actually collect DNA from people who have not been convicted of a crime, but who have been arrested for all felonies and some misdemeanors.
So let me ask you this. I mean, do you not have Fifth Amendment protection anymore? I mean, because we can use DNA to convict you.
Right. Well, yeah. Well, that's one of our arguments. And there's actually a case that's working its way through the federal system right now. It's called United States versus Reuben Mitchell. It's a case that originated out of western Pennsylvania. There's a federal law like SB 775. And the federal public defender out in western PA took it to court. The district court said that's right, it's unconstitutional. You have a right to be free from unreasonable searches and seizures. The Third Circuit Court of Appeals heard the case before the entire court, and in a split decision they actually upheld the law 8-6, and now Mr. Mitchell's attorneys have filed to the Supreme Court for the Supreme Court to hear the case, and they have not decided yet if they're going to hear it.
Right.
So this whole issue is still playing out in the courts. But our position is your position, that under the Fourth Amendment you have a right to be free from these types of searches.
Yeah, and the right to not to incriminate myself.
Well, that's true too.
Mm-hmm. I mean, because I'm thinking of if you've been arrested for something, they have to go and petition. And look, I want rapists and felons and criminals, I want them caught, convicted, and put in jail. But we've got a way of doing that. And there's a way that has to be done. And the people doing it have to be held to a high standard.
Right, absolutely. And the thing, about this is that they are collecting across the board. It doesn't matter what the evidence is in the case. Now, currently, if the case involves DNA evidence, the government has no problem getting a warrant from a court, and then they can compare evidence to the suspect.
I'm okay with that. Went to a court, did the due diligence, I'm okay with that.
Exactly. But under this law, it would just be blanket across the board. You take the person's DNA regardless, and they send it up. Now, this is another interesting piece of this. They send it to the databases that are maintained by the state police and the FBI. So from this point forward, this person's DNA is going to be checked against every unsolved crime in Pennsylvania and across the country. So essentially they become a suspect in all unsolved crimes from here on out because they're being checked against these other crimes.
Yeah, but there's part of me that if you've done this and you get caught, there's part of me that goes, I'm really not concerned about that so much.
Right.
I can see the slippery slope, though. I can. And what do you say to the anti-government people, to my teabagger friends who go, well, you know, this is just government intrusion? Because this is, I think, how they should look at it.
Yeah.
Because you could be arrested for just about anything and you let go. They still collected your DNA.
Correct. Now, fortunately, there was at least some pushback, and Senator Pelleggi gave in a little bit. Senator Hughes from Philadelphia questioned that at an Appropriations Committee meeting, because when the bill got to the Appropriations Committee, it actually would have taken DNA from a person who had been arrested, and even if that person was never charged, it would keep the DNA in the state police database. Well, Senator Hughes said, now hold on a second, you have someone who's arrested but never charged, you got to get rid of that DNA. And so they did amend it. That's like one small thing they did to make the bill a little bit better, but it still has major problems.
And again, is this creating jobs?
No, of course not.
Okay, because we're spending a lot of time doing a lot of things. I'm just not seeing job creation.
Yeah, and you said about the slippery slope. I had an interesting conversation with a Senate staffer who was on our side, who said, you know, we could take everybody's DNA and that would solve a lot of crimes, but people have rights.
Yeah, and that's what worries me. You start thinking about, well, what are some misdemeanors? Because when I was reading the press release, some misdemeanors. Well, what are some misdemeanors?
That's enumerated. That's in the bill. I think luring of a child is one, and there's one or two others that are part of that. I don't know. I don't know them off the top of my head, okay. But they are designated.
All right. So, okay.
It's not a decision that's made on the spot, so no. They're designated in the law.
Yeah, it kind of worries me that at some point we're going to set up DNA checkpoints like we do with drunk drivers, though.
Well, yes, and I certainly know people who have issues with these checkpoints, and I think we could get down that road at some point. I mean, that's part of the fight. You know, all these issues tie into each other at some point. You know, this is part of the fight over Real ID, where they are opening the door to biometric collection for your driver's license. At some point, the government has all these pieces, and all they got to do is start tying them together.
And, then all of those science fiction movies and all of those science fiction books I read as a kid then become reality. I mean, yeah. I look at 1984, and I'm going, it was a book when I was a kid. Now it's my life.
I know. I mean, I hate to sound a little too, afraid the black helicopters are about to come over the horizon, but, you see this stuff, and you see what they're trying to do piece by piece, and it's hard not to be worried.
Yeah. So what do we do on this? How do you stop? How do you stop all of this stuff? What are we doing?
Well, on voter ID, I can tell you that over the last 6 months, there have been a lot of senators feeling a lot of pressure, and I don't necessarily think this is a done deal. So folks definitely should put pressure on their own senators. There's an action alert that we posted on our Facebook page. Today, for that, our friends at Project Home have an email alert that you can send out. Of course, you can always call your senator, or even try to get a meeting. On the DNA bill, it's now going to the House, and it's interesting you brought up, Tea Party-minded folks and limited government type folks. I think there may be some dissension from what I've heard in the House Republican caucus over this DNA stuff. So, we're gonna put pressure on them as well.
No, because this has got to play right down their alley. We want liberty. We want liberty and freedom and all of that stuff. And,
right.
You know, that whole, Ben Franklin quote, give up a little bit of your liberty for freedom and your security, you get nothing.
Right. That's a constant tension. I mean, I hear this talk about small government. I just don't see the small government conservatism at the state capitol. I mean, the ACLU is, in a lot of ways, a small government organization. Because we defend people's constitutional rights, and what the Constitution does is put limits on government. You see a lot of people at the Capitol, both Republican, Democrat, and Republican, who want to use the power of the state in ways that invade our privacy, and we just got to push back against them.
That's why I'm glad you're there, Andy.
Thanks, Rick.
Andy Hoover, Legislative Director with the Pennsylvania ACLU. I appreciate the time. Thanks for filling us in, and keep up the fight.
Thanks, Rick. See you later.
Quick break. Right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
Mea culpa. I misspoke. My bad. I stand corrected. In past commentaries, I have called Newt Gingrich a lobbyist. Apparently, he hates that tag, even though he has indeed gotten very wealthy by taking big bucks from such special interest outfits as IBM, AstraZeneca, Microsoft, and Siemens in exchange for helping them get favors from federal and state governments. But Gingrich, his lawyers, and staff adamantly insist that it's rude and crude to call him a lobbyist. No, no, they bark. The Newt is a visionary. Major corporations, they explain, pay up to $200,000 a year to the corrupt former House Speaker's Policy Center for the sheer privilege of bathing in the soothing enlightenment of Newt's transformative vision. Also, as the man himself constantly reminds everyone, he has a Ph. by God D. So he's Dr. Newt, the certified visionary. Yet, the center's own sales pitch to lure potential corporate clients makes crystal clear that the visionary services he offers entail doing what, excuse the term, lobbyists do. For example, the center brags that Newt has, quote, contacts at the highest levels of government, and that being a paying customer, quote, increases your channels of input to decision makers. One corporate chieftain who hired the well-connected Washington insider for $7,500 a month plus stock options says that Gingrich, quote, made it very clear to us that he does not lobby, but that he could direct us to the right places in Washington. So, Mr. Do Not Call Me a Lobbyist is, in fact, selling his government contacts and peddling his political influence. But he does not lobby. Instead, he directs, makes calls, arranges meetings, opens doors, and, of course, he has visions. This is Jim Hightower saying so. We'll call Newt what he is, a Washington influence peddler.
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's populist take on what the powers that be are up to. Find out more at HightowerLowdown.org.
If the federal government continues to do the kinds of things that this administration is trying to do through the back door, through the National Labor Relations Board, that's killing our free market system.
We're running out of rich people in this country.
The NLRB has become a political sycophant for labor unions.
And one of the things the Congress should do immediately is defund the National Labor Relations Board.
It seems to me that what we're seeing is a ceding of power from Congress to these to the NLRB and other agencies.
It really is a freedom versus tyranny issue.
I'm a member of the GOP, trying to form a plutocracy. But if I can just bamboozle you, and you'll share my little point of view, what a wonderful world this would be.
Well, they're all squawking right now. They're crowing that they won. Our efforts made that end of that nasty labor relations board, made those evil people withdraw their complaint. And you look at the comments that come out of these right-wingers' mouths. I mean, it is absolutely hysterical. You know, the Mitster himself going, oh, the NLRB's decision to drop the suit against Boeing is a welcome step. But acting at request of union bosses tells us who's calling the shots. Really? Again, you know, I look at the Republican obsession with organized labor and go, I don't know that they're as powerful as you guys are giving them credit for. I mean, this is one of those situations where you're kind of just building them up. Huntsman said, oh, you Obama should have told the NLRB to stand down, and that he has a lack of leadership by allowing a rogue agency to threaten thousands of South Carolina jobs. The Newtster, the founding fathers warned that when government grows too big, the laws would be usurped for political purposes. The laws would be usurped for political purposes. And you know what? I got to be honest. I kind of agree with Newt on this. Because if you think about what this whole NLRB thing was, the whole case from with Boeing moving to South Carolina, it had nothing to do with South Carolina. It had everything with a company retaliating against its workers. A company breaking the law. That was what this was about. So when Newt says the founding fathers warned that when government grows too big, the law would be usurped for political purposes, maybe he's arguing the government is too big because the Republicans used government to try and go after the NLRB and basically eating itself. My favorite quote, though, comes from the Republican representative from Minnesota, Mr. Klein. Mr. Klein says today's decision confirms the NLRB's action against Boeing was nothing more than a shameless, shameless campaign to bully an American employer. He says, while I'm pleased Boeing and the union agreed to a resolution, thousands of jobs in South Carolina and many more across the country were threatened by the NLRB's decision to pick winners and losers in a labor dispute. Here it comes, the money shot. The top priority of the Obama NLRB should be to protect workers' rights. My jaw hit the floor when I read that. Because, ding dong, this is what the NLRB was doing. Boeing came out and said, we are moving to South Carolina because those workers went on strike. They basically came out in public and said, we are retaliating against them. We are going to punish them for their right. So when Klein says the top priority of the Obama NLRB should be to protect workers' rights, it's exactly what they were doing. Now understand, the reason that they pulled back is the process worked. I know you anti-government types don't want to believe that government sometimes solves problems, but this is what happened. The two parties came to the table, they negotiated. They sat down, they talked, and they resolved their problems. That's what the NLRB is supposed to be for. That's where you go to do those things, that's how it works. I know it's hard to believe. But that's what happened. So when I see someone like Klein, who just, I gotta be honest, it just makes me wanna smack myself. Say that the top priority of Obama's NLRB should be to protect workers' rights. That's what they were doing. Now I wish that you would choose to protect workers' rights and give them the ability to collective bargaining, give them the ability to join and form unions by, you know, hey, here's an idea, Representative Klein. Why don't you co-sponsor the Employee Free Choice Act? Why don't you get those other nitwits to go along? And I look at this and it's mind blowing at how ignorant some of these people are. The one guy from Texas, Greg Abbott, said NLRB caves to our legal efforts and our political pressure. Caves and drops the case against Boeing. They didn't drop the case against Boeing because they caved. They dropped it because it was resolved.
National Labor Relations Board, Solomon. Mr. Solomon came out and said, hey, look, he said 90% of our cases.
The general counsel.
Yeah, the general counsel. Okay. He said, look, 90% of our cases are mutually agreed to prior to us coming in and forcing a decision or making a decision in front of the NLRB. Sometimes it's a matter of a contract negotiations that they settle. Sometimes it's a separate agreement with the NLRB. But 90% of the cases, in other words, what he's saying is, look, this case worked. The process worked. And you know what? I bet you if you looked at it purely from an economic standpoint, Boeing is better off and will make a better profit where they are.
Yeah.
Because they have the infrastructure built there, their plants are there, and first and foremost, they have a very highly trained group of workers there, and in the long run, it would be cheaper for them just to stay in Washington, which they did.
It's where the knowledge base is, what you're saying. It's where the brains are. If you really want to protect workers' rights, why don't you try that? And, you know, I wish Republicans would look at workers the way they look at them themselves. I caught this article that, everybody's been beating up on Obama because Obama was planning on taking a 17-day Christmas vacation. And I guess that's still kind of on the, depending on what happens with unemployment and the payroll tax. And they went back and they looked at the Bush years. And I remember the Bush years. Remember Katrina? He was gone for, what, five weeks? It was the longest vacation in 36 years of presidential history. He took a 25-day vacation in August of 2002. Took a 5-week vacation in August of 2005. 2001, it was a 27-day vacation. Remember the month before 9/11? I mean, Bush was on vacation constantly. And let's not leave Reagan out. Reagan took a 25-day vacation in August as well, and he was a guy who kept going back to his ranch in California numerous times. So Obama, takes a couple of days, and the right goes nuts. The reality is Obama spent fewer days on vacation than either Bush or Reagan. Because, the conservatives, for all their talk of, well, it's meritocracy, we're going to work hard, they're not there all the time. They like their vacation. And I would say, why can't we have 5 weeks vacation, Jake? Why can't working people have vacation like that? You know, I know in Germany, I used to go diving. We used to go on vacation with the Mexico, with the Florida a bunch of times. And you'd meet people from Germany who were like, yeah, we start off with 30 days vacation a year. That's starting. Because they want us to go on vacation. because we spend money on vacation. It helps the economy. It's good. We're the ones who have this brain damaged problem. Anyway, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about the latest person going to jail for ripping up a petition out in Wisconsin. Also going to talk with Jenny Dye, a board member and activist from Wisconsin. Back after the...
Your proud defender of the working class majority, Rick Smith.
For 75 years, AFSCME has protected basic workers' rights. A living wage, health benefits, safe working conditions, these aren't privileges to be taken away, they're rights to be protected. This is Dave Filman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13. Public services and workers' rights are under attack like never before. But the Main Street movement is pulling together. Nurses, firefighters, cops, teachers, students, and neighbors. Ordinary Americans are fighting back and making history. From victories in Wisconsin, Ohio, and right here in Pennsylvania, AFSCME was there. AFSCME will always be there. Coming after workers and their unions, it's a shameful agenda for Wall Street politicians, but AFSCME's been in this fight for 75 years. We're not about to stop now. Join the Main Street movement at AFSCME13.org.
Dear John Bank, I am so sorry it has to be this way, but there's just no choice. I wish circumstances were different, but I can't hide my feelings any longer. I'm in love with another, and you just don't compare. I got tired of you taking advantage of me, charging me higher and higher fees, and raising rates behind my back. I did love you so, but now we have to break up. It's hard, but the right thing for me. I'm with PSECU now, and this credit union treats me right. That's all I ever asked for, to be somewhere I belong.
If you're ready to break up with your bank and take back what's yours, we're ready to help. Call, click, or come in. You can join. Go to PSECU.com/befree and see where you belong.
This credit union is federally insured by the National Credit Union Administration. Equal opportunity lender.
The right to bargain is the right that's fundamental. About power to the people, that's where it should be. It's called justice. It's called democracy. So hear this, Scott Walker, because your time is limited. Let us tell you what your big problem really is. It ain't your nagging, finger wagging, budget deficit. The problem lies with your moral deficit.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at therickSmithShow.com. Question, comment, something on your mind, you can email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. So like we talked about yesterday, a guy pulled up to one of the petition sites, decided, oh, I'm gonna be a smart guy. I'm going to take a pen, I'm going to scribble all over it and make it basically useless. Well, they arrested him. Turns out that's a felony. Probably should have known that before he did it. In fact, he could spend a year and a half in jail, 2 years on supervised probation, and be fined $10,000. So you got to wonder if the scribbling was well worth it. And another story came out today. Somebody went to one of the petition sites and taking pictures of people, taking pictures of their license plate, taking pictures of them, altercation, guy cited for disorderly conduct. You know what? If you don't agree with the people collecting the petitions, don't harass them. Save yourself the trouble. Anyway, one of the folks out on the ground there in Wisconsin is Jenny Dye. She's a candidate for Dane County Board, also a local activist. Jenny, thanks for taking time for me.
Hi, Rick. Thanks for having me on.
You know, I look at this, some of these stories that I'm seeing, and I got a question. Is this something that goes on frequently, or are these just one or two stories that are hitting the national wire?
Well, I think it's a little bit of both. Unfortunately, there's a lot more of that type of animosity and attacks on each other happening than I think we have typically seen in Wisconsin politics prior to this year. But they really are primarily isolated incidents.
Yeah, because I remember seeing one of the Facebook page people taking, oh, I'm going to collect petitions and I'm going to burn them, or I'm going to make birdcage bottoms out of them, and a whole bunch of them, I'm going to shred them, all kind of felonies. And I'm sure that the people didn't know it when they were saying it, but still, at the end of it, felonies.
Absolutely. And, you know, people at this point, particularly in those Facebook groups, have had a number of people tell them that it is a felony to interfere with the recall petitions. And there are still people who continue to say in forums like Facebook, or they post on Twitter, that they're tearing up recall petitions or burning them. And it's hard to tell if that's just a lot of bark and no bite, or if in fact people really are out there circulating petitions and then destroying them at the end of the day.
Yeah, the problem with having all that bark is you get a couple of nitwits who buy into other people are doing it, so I can go do it too.
Exactly.
And I look at the guy who scribbled all over it. You know that's what he got sucked up into. He probably wasn't, you know, probably wasn't a bad guy, but he got stuck. All his buddies are saying, that's what I'm going to do. And he goes, well, I'm going to do it too.
I think that's absolutely true. And that's one of the reasons that everything that's happened in Wisconsin this year has been so hard for people, not just on a politics and a, you know, hitting your pocketbook and the actual practical impact of the bills, but on the way that it's changed the interactions that we have with each other in our state.
Now, I would have to say, you know, when we were there back in February, we met some of the really nicest salt of the earth people, that, you know, some of the nicest people I've ever met. And my fear at that time was what was going on was really going to tear apart the communities and tear apart neighbors, like I saw in Ohio when we were back for the SB5 fight.
I think, yes, it has in some situations, like we're seeing with these people who are tearing up recall petitions. There was a student at a private university here in Madison who tore up a petition, and those kinds of things definitely are divisive. But on the other hand, it's really brought a lot of people together in ways that we haven't seen before. You know, communities that are traditionally red counties in Wisconsin, we're finding that there are people who are almost coming out of the closet on being a liberal in a red county, and those people are banding together and finally talking about it and talking about their commitment and getting organized to move forward, and that's an amazing thing to see.
Yeah, I can imagine. I'm one of those liberals in a very, very red neighborhood. So I know the feeling. Let's talk about you. You're running for office there for the Dane County Board. What got you wanting to do that?
Well, I think obviously everything that's happened in Wisconsin this year has been very inspiring in terms of motivating me personally to get more involved in politics. But I think that given the changes that the Republicans and Scott Walker have made in state law, it really has put a lot of more power in the hands of local municipalities in terms of their interactions with and how they treat their county employees. And I have been somebody who has been committed since February to really making sure that we're fighting for our working families and that we're making sure that we're still providing human services and that we're funding public safety. And I think one of the things that I am in a position to be able to do is step up and actually run for office. My district is currently held by a conservative member of the Dane County Board, and so I'm definitely motivated to get out there and make some changes and be a more positive impact for our working family.
And as you're out there knocking on people's doors and shaking hands and kissing babies, what are people telling you?
You know, people are definitely ready for some change in the discourse that we're currently having in Wisconsin. They want to get back to the Wisconsin values that so many of us grew up with, where you really did care about your neighbor and there was a sense that we were all in this together, and that it wasn't just about those of us in the 99% making sacrifices while we give corporate tax breaks to the 1% and then try to balance the budget on the backs of public employees.
Are you seeing that? I mean, you're talking about you're in a Republican area, I guess. Are you seeing the Republicans who are waking up to that realization that we really have, as a nation, grown apart from the very, very wealthy? I mean, I was just looking at a study here not too long ago. A guy looked at the CBO report that said that, you know, we've the gulf between the rich and the poor has grown at such a fast pace, but that the majority of it happened between not 1979 and 2007, but actually 79 and 86, and that was the boom of it. It's just that we haven't felt it for this long.
Mm-hmm.
So are you seeing that they're getting that reality that, you know, hey, my kids may not do better than I did, or are you seeing any of that?
I think absolutely, and I would say a lot of that conversation started here in Wisconsin back in February with the large-scale protests that we have and has been forced into the national scope of debate by the Occupy movement. And so these conversations about class issues and wealth distribution aren't something that I've ever seen during my lifetime, and now are something that's really on the forefront of the minds of voters. And the vast majority of voters are not in the 1%, and they're now aware of and starting to become more educated about the impact that that's really having on their daily lives.
You know, we were in Wisconsin back in February. The one thing that caught me was the fact that the majority of the folks that I had an opportunity to talk to who were there at the beginning said what caught their attention was the governor saying he was going to call out the National Guard, and that, you know, hearkening back to their labor education in the schools, which is something I wish we could get here in Pennsylvania.
Yeah, I think that definitely caught a lot of people's attention. And that it just wasn't the way that we've typically done business in Wisconsin. During the initial mass protest, we joked about something called Wisconsin Nice or Midwest Nice, that we really were neighborly towards each other. And all of a sudden, instead of this neighborly attitude that we've always grown up with, we were being told the National Guard was going to be called out. These drastic changes in the way that we've always done business with our public employees in Wisconsin, at least since I think the 50s or 60s, were going to happen overnight. And that's just not something that people are used to and that people have seen. And so it really brought people out, because it felt like this urgent attack on not just public employees, but on Wisconsin values.
And the whole way of life. I know we were heading out because we drove out. The news reports that we heard, there was chaos going on, and I was kind of looking forward to chaos. But the first thing I ran into was a 96-year-old woman with a sign saying, "Do I look like a union thug?" handing me a cookie.
Yes. There were a lot of reports in right-wing publications that there was violence occurring at the Capitol, and I was down there every day. And that was comical to those of us who were there, and we started talking about it and actually nicknamed it cookie violence, because some of the most violent acts that we saw were people who just really wanted you to take one of these cookies that they had taken the time to bake, and they were trying to deliver it to you. And, of course, we were all pretty stuffed on Ian's pizza at that point in time.
Yeah. My favorite sign was, thank you, CNN, for telling me what's on Twitter. That was probably my favorite sign there. So let's get back to what's going on today. I understand they're pretty close to getting the number of signatures that they need to get this thing moving forward.
Absolutely. In the first 12 days, we collected over 300,000 signatures, and I'm hearing that we're continuing to keep up the pace. I don't have an official update on numbers, but there are some people who are putting out there that they think we could be on track to even have all of the signatures collected by the Christmas holiday.
Very nice. You know, because, you know, for all of Cleefish, with all of the really sad ads, the Sarah Palin attempt ads, I still think they're going to be recalled.
I think that we definitely are going to get the signatures, and that we're going to move into the next phase of who's going to be the Democratic candidate and the heat of an actual election, with the unlimited amounts of money that Scott Walker has been allowed to raise while the recall petitions have been circulating. And so that's going to be an interesting dynamic, just the sheer amount of money that is pouring into elections in Wisconsin this year from out of state.
I hear something like $70 million that they think he's going to be able to raise.
I think I'm hearing that as well, which when you really look at it, I believe the Barrett campaign in 2010 spent about $15 million, and that was not just the Barrett campaign, but it was including all the allies that were also spending money on that effort. So when you think about that campaign, including all the allies spending $15 million, and then Scott Walker spending potentially $70 million on this recall, is really astronomical.
That's just, I guess you could say one thing that for his time as governor, he did bring money into the state.
Well, he certainly brought money, but not a lot of jobs. Unfortunately for Wisconsinites, you know, last month we lost a significant amount of jobs when the jobs report came out. And just in the past 2 days, we've had reports of some long-standing manufacturing jobs in the north central Wisconsin area. Those plants will be closing, and that's a combined total of almost 1,000 jobs, I believe, that will be lost in the near future in Wisconsin.
That is just horrible. Just horrible. I give you guys all the credit in the world for getting out there, knocking on doors, and getting the petition signed. You as well for taking the time to run for office. I wish you nothing but the best of luck, and I appreciate you taking time for me.
Well, thanks so much, Rick, and we appreciate both you and everybody else in the nation who's paying such close attention to what's happening in Wisconsin and giving us the support that we need to keep moving forward and keep collecting those signatures.
Well, if we can help you stop it there, maybe it doesn't come here.
Absolutely. That's my goal, too.
Jenny Dye, I appreciate the time. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Rick.
Quick break right back after this. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. This is The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
Hi, I'm Bob Snyder, president of Teamsters Local 776 here in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. For more than 100 years, Teamsters have been standing together to create a better tomorrow. We Teamster members are your friends and neighbors. Teamsters move goods across the nation, take care of seniors, serve and protect our community, and so much more. We are hardworking, dedicated professional workers, united to make our lives, our communities, and our nation stronger. If you want to be part of the team, join the Teamsters for a better tomorrow. Contact us at 1-800-692-6280. That's 1-800-692-6280. Or visit our website at TeamstersLocal776.org. We are people helping people.
My name is Joanna, and my job is to protect children, to help them live in safe and stable families. I work for you, the taxpayers, in Children and Youth Services. Every day, I help children and families in crisis. Many parents have lost their jobs, making it harder to keep a roof overhead, food on the table, and stress under control. My caseloads are huge, and waiting lists for critical services are too long. Yet I know the safety of these children depends on me. Even in tough economic times, legislators must fund these vital programs. Because if we don't help these kids now, the cost to them and to us will be much higher later on. Children don't only depend on me doing my job, they're counting on you to care about their safety. Contact your state legislators today. Demand that they invest in programs that prevent and treat child abuse. Because a child in pain shouldn't have to wait.
Brought to you by SEIU Local 668. Visit our website at SEIU668.org and join our Human Services campaign.
The man who sends the investor class diving for their tax shelters. Rick Smith.
Back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website at therickSmithShow.com. If you missed any portion of our program, you can download the podcast there at the website. Or if you've got a smartphone, download the Stitcher app and you can take the program on the go. So Saturday, all eyes are going to be on the Newtster in the latest Debate Olay or Debate Orama or Debate Cade 2011. Because honestly, I mean, the Republicans have really turned this debate stuff into really kind of hilarity, fun stuff, kind of like WrestleMania, debate mania. I think Vince McMahon has nothing on Reince Priebus. These debates are every bit as phony, every bit as scripted as wrestling. But you know, there's part of me says not as fun. Just not as fun. You really don't have the colorful characters. And if you go back and you think about what the focus group said about Romney, wooden and stiff, you look at these people. There's not much there. They're about an inch deep. At least the wrestling people, there's some funny ha-has there. There's something interesting. Anyway, Rick Perry was being talked to by one of the editorial boards out in Iowa. And he forgot Sonia Sotomayor's name. What was her name? Myers-Briggs. No, wait a minute. Something like that. And then, you know, this is the Des Moines Register, their editorial board. This is the paper. And he's just being a doofus. And he later goes, well, you know, he got these 8 unelected judges. They're on the Supreme Court thingy. You go, 8? This is a guy who wants to be president. Now, you know, if you went down and you asked the guy who was delivering the bread, who he thought, you know, and asked him how many Supreme Court justices, and they said 8, you'd go, okay, he delivers bread. President of the United States? Really? Scary, scary stuff.
That's embarrassing. By the way, did you catch what happened to your girlfriend, Rick? Embarrassment.
She got beat up by an 8-year-old.
No. The Donald was incensed that she decided.
That's not embarrassing.
Well.
When she got taken to school by an 8-year-old, that was embarrassing.
The Donald said she came up here 4 times.
Yeah.
And he said, I was deeply disappointed. He said, it's about loyalty.
Loyalty to who?
Apparently, the Donald thinks that, he deserves a certain amount of loyalty.
Yeah, well, the debate there, that's just going to be, they should just do that in a corner somewhere, just the 3 of them.
Well, you know, here's the irony. This is how screwed up it is. I mean, if Karl Rove and Reince Priebus wouldn't have spoken out publicly, and they wouldn't have, the establishment wouldn't have applied pressure, I bet you most of them would have appeared.
Which is why this is telling me that they're behind all of these debates. They're behind the whole messaging. They're behind all of the horse race that's going on. All of this stuff is well scripted, just like wrestling. It's all well scripted. It's all put forth. They brought Herman Cain up. They pushed him up a little, you know, because let's keep it entertaining. But he got uppity. He got up out there and he started going, hey, I might be able to win. And they smacked him back down because they've always got the dirt they need to bring you back in line. And that's really what happens. And I think Rick Perry's another one of those guys. You know, there's dirt on him that's going to, that if he gets out of hand, they're going to be able to pull him back with.
No, you talked about dirt. I think here's where the nude has a big advantage on him. He's handling it the way a politician should. He's not firing back. He doesn't have steady on the course. His talking point is, look, I have one enemy, and that's Barack Obama. From strictly a professional politician standpoint, that's exactly how it should be handled. And in the polls, by the way, they keep hammering. He keeps rising.
Yeah, they haven't hammered him yet. This weekend, we'll see what happens. As the next week, come on, there's going to be somebody else going to rise. This thing's going to keep bouncing around because it's good for entertainment value. And understand what they're doing. They're pushing their agenda. The more they're out there talking about, oh, we need to cut unemployment, the more we need to talk about, we need, you know, all the things that they're pushing, school vouchers, all of the stuff, the privatization, all of the stuff that they're pushing their goalposts further and further and further because they're all pretty much on the same page. Tax cuts, deregulation, feed the wealthy, all of that stuff, that seems to be the core message of all of them. So it's that choreographed message. It's just like World Championship Wrestling. It's a choreographed show. That's what these debates have been. And they'll snipe at each other a little bit, but for the most part, they're all playing along in the game because they get it.
Even though it's early, Rick, I do believe that the establishment is a little afraid of Newt getting it. I think they realize he can't win. Now, if he starts winning some key primaries, he wins Iowa, he goes to South Carolina, wins that up in New Hampshire. Oh, there's going to be an unmitigated assault on me. And the truth is,
Romney's going to win New Hampshire. He has to win New Hampshire. It's his backyard. It's his media market. I think he almost has to win that. But even still, I mean, you're going to push all, what's going on is you're pushing all these extremists out there, and you're going, look how extreme they are. And I think the argument's going to be back to Mitt going, oh, here's somebody rational. And he's still, to me, way out there.
But here's the thing: he doesn't seem to be able to get above 23%. And I agree with you. I do believe he stands the best chance of any of them. But yet, among Republican voters, and no matter how the Democrats feel about him,
that's because you're hung up in polling. This is a performance. It's a dance.
But he has
it's a political play.
He has to get through the Republican primary.
Yeah, all this is still the play, period. We'll see what happens with Newt next week. We'll see what kind of other things pop out. Again, I'm seeing this in a little different fashion. All of these debates, all of this stuff, to me, just seems to be like a choreographed play. It's that simple. And it's interesting watching what the candidates are doing. Perry with his attack on, Obama's war on religion. You've got to love this.
I'm not ashamed to admit that I'm a Christian. But you don't need to be in the pew every Sunday to know that there's something wrong in this country when gays can serve openly in the military, but our kids can't openly celebrate Christmas or pray in school. As president, I'll end Obama's war on religion, and I'll fight against liberal attacks on our religious heritage. Faith made America strong. It can make her strong again. I'm Rick Perry, and I approve this message.
I'm sure you do, while you're wearing the jacket that the guys in Brokeback Mountain wore. Yeah, okay, I got you. I do love the mock ad that came out after it.
I'm not ashamed to admit that I'm an atheist. But you know there's something wrong with this country when politicians think it's okay to hate on gays and non-believers and ants, as if their magic spirit guide or whatever blessed them with special a-hole privileges. Perhaps this is a good time to remember that gay and atheist presidents didn't get us into the war in Iraq, the financial crisis, or turn your mortgage into toilet paper. Maybe we should let Christians do what they do best, praying, which clearly doesn't work, and leave the governing to sodomites and infidels. Rick Perry may believe in God, but I've seen his polls, and God does not believe in Rick Perry. I'm a godless heathen, and I approve this message.
I don't think Perry stands a chance, to be honest. But, here again, I think there's part of Perry. When you're projecting that kind of homophobia, that kind of makes you go, are the rumors in Texas true? Is Rick a little light in the loafers? Does he jump to the other side of the fence? Well, there was a study done at the Department of Psychology at the University of Georgia at Athens that was published at PubMed.gov that has concluded that people who are homophobic, they tend to be aroused by homosexual acts. According to this study that they did, and they took a group of people, they got their views on homosexuality. If you were rabidly opposed, they put you in one control group. If you were I could care less. They put you in another group, and evidently they put a little meter, like sensors, on your little person, and showed you different images and different videos, and it turns out the people who were the most homophobic had heightened traces of arousal. Their little person expanded. As were people who weren't homophobic, saw images of homosexuals doing what it is they do, and there was no reaction whatsoever. So, the study kind of goes into the person who's going to tell you outwardly how they hate gays, and maybe there's some truth in they may be gay themselves. And they're overcompensating. So I looked at Rick Perry and I go, is it possible? And there's nothing wrong with it. I guess down in Texas they'd have a problem with it. But if that's what he does, that's his business. None of my business. Just don't be a hypocrite about it. But it's interesting. Now I can actually cite that there's actually been a scientific study done on this, and there's actually some citable documentation. And you can get that at PubMed.gov. The guy who was the head of the study is A.H. Buss and M. Perry. They did this back in 92. M. Perry? I wonder. Interesting. Interesting. Maybe a relative. Maybe they know Rick. Anyway, the Herman Cain train, he has not closed the idea of possibly taking on a media gig, which, again, if you listen to what I've been saying for the longest time, I thought he got in it for one reason. That was to get the next rung in the media stardom line. Well, this is what they're saying. He may be one of the pundits for Fox News. He may be doing some other things to get out there in the public eye. Anyway, let's take a quick break. Right back after this, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. We're going to fake it.
Not right wing, just right. The Rick Smith Show. The Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. Union-represented podiatrists are fighting for fairness in the way they're paid for podiatric care. It's an issue that impacts access to podiatric care for working people who often work physical jobs and therefore need more foot care. OPEIU Guild 45 President Dr. John Mariachi.
The OPEIU, we were the first ones that started independent union or guild to represent physicians. And I believe that the clout and the legislative exposure of having a union behind us gives us some strength and ability to get our thoughts to the table.
OPEIU podiatrists want equal treatment and respect when it comes to the way the managed care health system treats them. OPEIU supports proposed legislation in Congress that would make it easier for low-income people to get foot care under Medicaid. OPEIU President Mike Goodwin says the bill, H.R. 3364, would also save the government money through preventative care. Americans United for Change has launched the Romney Gecko 2012 presidential ticket with a video called Morning on Wall Street. Spokesperson Lauren Wiener.
Romney has a long history of job killing in the private sector, and we think that that needs a lot of attention, and so we're going to try to do that with this campaign.
You can check out the Greed is Good Romney Gecko ticket at romneygecko.com.
And under the leadership of Mitt Romney and Gordon Gecko, the 1% will be richer, stronger, and better off. Even if the rest of us are unemployed, homeless, and hungry. It's morning again on Wall Street.
The Obama administration is the first to use federal spending to apply affirmative action to help workers with disabilities. Jesse Russell has more.
The Obama administration is seeking to increase the number of disabled people receiving jobs through federal contracts. The unemployment rate for disabled workers is substantially higher than the national average at 13%. The goal of the new administration rule would be to see disabled workers accounting for 7% of the employees hired by federal contractors. This would be the first time an administration has used federal spending to apply affirmative action for individuals with disabilities. The rule would place specific requirements on contractors that would encourage an increased hiring of workers with disabilities. However, the rule does not require contractors meet quotas. Before the rule is approved, it will be open for public comment for 60 days. Depending on the results of those comments, it could be activated as early as February.
This newscast made possible in part through underwriting from the AFL-CIO and by Ulico, the Union Labor Life Insurance Company. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Your working class radio experience, where hard work, common sense, and rational thought are a reality. The Rick Smith Show.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. So this week, the entire week, there were actions into Washington, D.C., for the Take Back the Capitol week of action. On Wednesday, they occupied the congressional offices. My favorite one being Joe Walsh, the deadbeat father from Illinois. Again, I don't know how you can be in Congress. I don't know how anybody votes for someone who's over $110,000 in back child support. I don't know how you vote for that guy with him telling you he's a fiscal conservative and believes in paying his bills. I'm still not getting that. Anyway, one of the folks who was in D.C. for the Take Back the Capitol week of action was Jerome Wilson. He was on the program a couple weeks back. He's from Pittsburgh. He and about 100 other folks headed to D.C. Let's find out what went on. Jerome, thanks for taking time for me.
Hey, Rick.
Good to talk to you again. So how was the week?
It was good. It was good. The weather was, I'll put it in home. Clementable. It happened.
Right.
It was rainy. It was wet. It was muddy. So we made our movements and our actions were meant for certain congressmen, and we try to put our perspective to their ears.
About how many people did you see there?
Rick, I got my estimate at yesterday's event. I'd say there were at least 5,000.
Nice. See, that's what needs to happen. People need to get out in the streets. We need to see the unemployed. We need to see the uninsured. People need to get out and scream, holler, carry on, grab people's attention.
Yes, we need to show a root of authority because, one, we don't have accountable, so to say, politicians in those offices. We tried to get to speak with
Pat
Toomey. Pat Toomey, you got him. I didn't want to name his name. I try to stay away from his name because he doesn't want to answer our calls. And we had some people, we were there, and he wouldn't even speak with us. We also went to Dent's office, though none of us that were at his office came from his area, though there were some women that work in a child care programming that is in his area, and we still couldn't speak with him because he was on the floor at the time. We sat in on a Senate meeting yesterday where it was about the unemployment bill, and there were four witnesses or people that actually gave testimony on reasons why the bill needs to be extended, and also why are people being denied jobs because they are unemployed and employers would rather go for people that are already employed.
Right.
That's something else that's making people, so to say, walk away from seeking employment.
Yeah, and when you're unemployed, I mean, just getting an interview is hard enough than to have this structural thing in your way, this obstacle in your way, where employers are just walking away from you, because then it just becomes a snowball effect. You know, I know a couple of people who have been unemployed for a long time, and that's what they run into.
Well, there was a lady that actually her testimony was the most heart-wrenching I felt because the industry she was in, the telecommunications industry, is basically overseas now. We want to talk about automation of systems, yep, but we're taking them all overseas, Rick. And for one, we have people that are supposed to be accountable for us, not that 1% they're representing that help contribute more and we contribute more because we vote for them.
And that's the thing that I think we need to get back. You know, I was talking to somebody the other day about, they said, well, we need our term limits. And I said, we've already got term limits. It's called going to the poll and voting them out.
Yeah, well, and then we have the fact we can't impeach them out when we see they're not doing nothing but accepting a raise every year.
Yeah, excellent. Well, good
You're
point. But at the end of the day,
cutting programs and taking raises. There is so much road work that needs to be done, and we can go by what Brock said when he was voted in office. He wanted to get 2.5 million people back into work to build the infrastructure. Why are we still denying this jobs bill, and that's geared to the infrastructure? There was a gentleman, I believe he was from Idaho, he was up there talking, and it was about some different oil, or it was Oregon, I believe, and he was talking about some oil that they can get from the ground there, and it could actually help by building tens of thousands of jobs throughout the United States, and we have Republicans that want to say Brock's bill is not adequate.
Yeah.
We're putting people to work to pay taxes.
So let me ask you.
They can have their high salaries.
Where did you stay while you were down there?
We stayed at Gallaudet University. There were many places that were set up. It was through, like, the Interfaith Networks. Like, we have what's called Penn here in Pittsburgh Interfaith Network, and networks in D.C. Jesse Jackson even showed up yesterday when we all got back to camp after rallying through the Capitol. We got back to a speech from Jesse, and Jesse's speech will wake you up to realize we are the people and we want to stand together. We need to get together, as you were stating earlier, to make this happen because we have unaccountable politicians in office receiving money, and they already have money, and we're still that 99% looking to gear ourselves to help the younger generations under us to have an education and an American dream once again, right?
Yeah, you know, one of the things that I've called for a while is that, you know, the religious community has to, especially the leftward-leaning religious community, the people who believe that Jesus wanted to feed the hungry and clothe the naked and find shelter for the homeless, those folks, to battle against the people who think that, well, God wants me to be as rich as I can be, and as long as I screw the guy next to me before he screws me, I'm going to be all right, and take that kind of that fight on.
So that's the opposite direction that the Bible is teaching us, if we're going to go into the biblical standpoint of it, right? Because for one, we're taught to help one another, not hurt each other. And that's what basically that 1% has been doing to us 99% for countless years. We can go back to the Reagan era. How could the air traffic controllers lose their jobs because they're overworked? You wonder what underemployed means. Well, I call it overworked when there should be two other people working with that job quality, and I'm only getting 1 cent pay.
Yeah, excellent point. So the week of action, were you satisfied by what you were able to accomplish?
Yes, sir. We got a new motto. Even when the officers show up, give the officers a raise, because national security was out and forced to protect us and help us, and also the Capitol Police. They were not there to harm us at all. They just kept the traffic away from us, and we all deserve to understand that we're here in this country to build this country, and we're being broken by the 1%. We're being sold back into the debtor's prison.
Yep, and company stores and the whole lot.
Yes, even Jesse's, one of his statements was, how come so much of America is in debt? And we're talking about the capital debt and not the people that have earned a right to not be in debt.
Yeah, excellent point. Jerome, I appreciate the recap of what took place over the last week. And I'm glad you gave us the opportunity to hear a little bit about what went on.
Hey, Rick, I thank you for the opportunity to voice my freedom of opinion.
All right. Thanks so much, Jerome Wilson.
We deserve it.
All righty. Keep up the fight, brother.
Yes, sir. You stay up on the radio and keep us linked in, all right?
We're trying. Thanks so much.
Joyous holiday to you.
You too as well. You know, I look at this, and at the end of the day, I'm thrilled to see people. I'm just thrilled to see feet in the streets. That's what I've been calling for the longest time, and you can see what it's done. It has changed the national conversation. It has changed the debate. It has changed. I know in New York, for instance, you know, the governor there who was hell-bent on not raising taxes on the millionaires, well, you know what? He's decided that they're going to do it. Now, the devil's in the details. We'll see. But, you know, you gotta push these people to doing what they know is right. And go back to FDR. You know, FDR said, you want all this stuff? Make me do it. Get out there and get the political support that I need to pass this stuff through.
I find it pretty incredible that a U.S. senator will not even allow his constituents to come into his office and talk to him. I find that reprehensible. I mean, Toomey won. He won in a close election, and he won in a very unique year. I think Mr. Toomey has to be held accountable. I think he's very much beatable. I really do when he's up for election.
Well, when they had the 99 Santas who showed up at his office here in Harrisburg to deliver the coal in their petition, the guy, you know, took the bag of coal or whatever it was that they gave him, but he wouldn't take the letters from the constituents and, you know, wouldn't say anything. He came down and said, fine, just give it to me, and he left. You know, he didn't bother talking to anybody and wouldn't answer any questions. So, you know, it's kind of one of those deals. The least that they could do if 99 of your constituents show up at your office is to answer a couple of questions. Say, I got 10 minutes, hit me with a couple of questions, instead of just coming down, grabbing, and going.
I think a lot of people voted for him out of anger. A lot of people in America were upset. And there were a lot of people in Pennsylvania that were upset. I don't really think that they really know this man's position on some very key issues. We knew him as a very, very conservative candidate. In fact, as far right as Senator Santorum had become, this guy on some key issues was even further to the right. This man is very, very conservative.
Yeah, well, Scary stuff. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Quick break, right back after this.
10% of the people own 90% of the wealth. We're new to them. Take a look at yourself. 10% of the people own 90% of the wealth.
Where smart policy and sound investment matters. The Rick Smith Show.
Mea culpa. I misspoke. My bad. I stand corrected. In past commentaries, I have called Newt Gingrich a lobbyist. Apparently, he hates that tag, even though he has indeed gotten very wealthy by taking big bucks from such special interest outfits as IBM, AstraZeneca, Microsoft, and Siemens in exchange for helping them get favors from federal and state governments. But Gingrich, his lawyers, and staff adamantly insist that it's rude and crude to call him a lobbyist. No, no, they bark. The Newt is a visionary. Major corporations, they explain, pay up to $200,000 a year to the corrupt former House Speaker's Policy Center for the sheer privilege of bathing in the soothing enlightenment of Newt's transformative vision. Also, as the man himself constantly reminds everyone, he has a Ph. by God D, so he's Dr. Newt, the certified visionary. Yet, the center's own sales pitch to lure potential corporate clients makes crystal clear that the visionary services he offers entail doing what, excuse the term, lobbyists do. For example, the center brags that Newt has, quote, contacts at the highest levels of government, and that being a paying customer, quote, increases your channels of input to decision makers. One corporate chieftain who hired the well-connected Washington insider for $7,500 a month plus stock options says that Gingrich, quote, made it very clear to us that he does not lobby, but that he could direct us to the right places in Washington. So, Mr. Do Not Call Me a Lobbyist is, in fact, selling his government contacts and peddling his political influence. But he does not lobby. Instead, he directs, makes calls, arranges meetings, opens doors, and of course, he has visions. This is Jim Hightower saying so. We'll call Newt what he is, a Washington influence peddler.
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's populist take on what the powers that be are up to. Find out more at HightowerLowdown.org.
Radio of, for, and by we the working people. The Rick Smith Show.
What the hell are we fighting for? Just surrender and it won't hurt at all. Just got time to say your prayer. While you're waiting for a hammer, a hammer to fall.
1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Thoughts, questions, comments. Also, you can email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. I do answer all emails personally. So, Ron Paul. Today was out on the stump. He was at Iowa State University there at the campus there at Ames, Iowa, talking to about 1,000 students where he, well, talking about George Bush, talking about Iraq. He came out with this gem.
Go along with all these wars. And it's just think of what happened after 9/11. Immediately, before there was any assessment, there was glee in the administration because now we can invade Iraq.
There was glee, he says, during the Bush years. And, you know, that's kind of how I remember it. And you'll remember he's the guy who during the CNN Tea Party debate, the day after the anniversary of 9/11, said that bin Laden and Al-Qaeda, they were explicit. You know, they attacked us because we had bases in their holy land. They attacked us because we didn't give fair treatment to the Palestinians. They attacked us because of oil. And, you know, he got into a lot of trouble for it, even though that is exactly what they said. They didn't want bases in Saudi Arabia. They didn't like our unfettered support of Israel. And they thought oil should be $200 a barrel. I don't know that that's disputed. But the idiot doofus base there in the Republican Party, oh, how dare we talk about that? Because you were blaming America first. And he came back later and he said, look, I'm not blaming you. I'm not blaming me. I'm not blaming, it's not us. It's our flawed foreign policy. that did this. Not the people. It's the policy. And on that vein, I do agree with Ron Paul. I mean, it was one of those, you know, moments where you go,
light bulb.
Duh. So when today I see that, and you look at this and you go, can you possibly be any more blatant about your rewrite of history? When I see Hannity go on and say that, you know, during a segment on the top 10 news stories of 2011 and Bin Laden not being the top story or on the top 10 at all, you kind of got to question this. And the guy who was there, a guy named Joe Trippi, a Democratic consultant, said, you know, don't you think the death of the Al-Qaeda leader should make the list? And, you know, Hannity said, well, you know, we killed him thanks to George Bush. And the guy goes, you'd give credit to Bush? Because if Obama had gotten his way, we wouldn't have gotten Bin Laden, and you know that. According to them, according to Hannity. And I'm going, well, wait a second. Wasn't it? Did I miss that day? Was Bin Laden, was Bush at the helm? Did I miss this? And, you know, at the end of it, you go, it should be at least the top. It should be the number one story of the year, but it didn't even make Time Magazine's top 10.
First of all, if you want to interject George Bush and Bin Laden, let's look at the truth. Bin Laden was where? Most of the intelligence community agreed that he was in the mountains somewhere between Afghanistan and Pakistan. And originally we had 150,000 troops earmarked. All of a sudden George Bush and the neocons get this great idea, we're going to invade Iraq. So instead of putting in 150,000 troops, which would have been enough to go into those mountains and probably kill or capture Bin Laden, we sent only 40,000. Now, the second point is, Donald came out and said something even stupider. He said, the president deserves no credit. He said he had three options, to do nothing, to use drones, or send in the elite unit. So he really, now I don't quite understand his logic, but he claims that the president deserves nothing. Now, how you can attack the president on security is beyond me. He's done, actually, to be honest, he surprised me how well he has done.
Well, I mean, the whole comment, this whole push is to throw back against the fact that he has done pretty well in foreign policy. And they need to beat that back because they're supposed to be the foreign policy people.
And they also attack him on Israel, which is crazy. They say, well, you know, he's been soft. No, if you go over and you talk to the leaders in Israel, they like him. On the Palestinian question, he stood strong for Israel, which to some, and probably me too, surprised us.
But, you know, you may remember Dana Cappuccino Perino. She was out with Hannity back in 2009, and she said, and he let it go, that we didn't have a terrorist attack in our country during Bush's term. I'm going, okay. There was that 9/11 thing, but I guess that doesn't count. You gotta love how they rewrite history. So the other talking point has been about immigration, and Rick Santorum's been out there, our guy. You know, first it was Bachman saying we're gonna drag him out, babies crying. Now Santorum's out there saying, well, you know, they're breaking a law every single day there, year. There's no such thing. You can't be here for 20 years and only commit one crime. You know, you got someone else's social security number because you stole it, and every day you've stole it. And he says families should be broken up when the law is broken, which includes illegal immigration. I'm going, isn't this Mr. Family Values? Isn't this the guy who keeps saying we need to talk about social issues? Isn't this the guy who's, or am I missing that? Isn't this the good God-fearing guy? Or again, am I missing this? It's kind of bizarre to me how out of one side of his mouth he can proclaim to be this pious being, while on the other one, he is a mean, ugly guy. I mean, the frothy one, really, really, this is scary stuff. And you look at the immigration stuff that's been going on down in Alabama, especially, because they've been doing really a lot of dumb stuff with their rules. And, you know, originally, I think they thought it was just going to be for brown people. You just got to go after those brown people. Turns out they stopped a yellow guy and a white guy, a Japanese executive from one of the car companies, and a German executive from one of the car companies. Now you've got the governor of Alabama making phone calls like crazy, talking to all of these foreign executives saying, oh, no, please keep bringing your companies and don't pull your companies out of here. We're not anti-foreign company. We just hate brown people. Bring your foreign people over here. We'll figure this out. Because he said that we're very pro-foreign company in Alabama. And I'm going, did the governor of an American state say that we're pro-foreign company? It goes back to the auto bailout for me. I mean, it really does. I mean, I think we're on the cusp of what could become a civil war. You had U.S. senators actively seeking to destroy American car companies because their states had foreign car companies. I remember Zach Wobb saying it. You know, we should let them fail. You know, Volkswagen put a plant in Tennessee, paid less health care, less benefits, less wages, and they're competing just fine. Understand, that's the conservative worldview. Get rid of those good-paying jobs, bring in the crappy ones. Those jobs that had wages and benefits that supported a family and a place where you had a voice on the job, get rid of those, and let's keep people in line and desperate. So I find it interesting that the governor there of Alabama is now going, well, we better look at this because a couple of big companies, like this Golden Dragon Precise Copper Tube Group, this Chinese company that had pledged to build a $100 million factory in Alabama, they're now reconsidering. And a Canadian steel company had thought about going down there, and they're like, well, you know, we better reconsider. So has their immigration, their hateful, angry immigration policy, has that really, really helped them? Remember, it was all about the brown people. Gotta go get the brown people. And this is my favorite story of the day, I think. Not favorite because it's a good story. Favorite because it's just absolutely ridiculous and sad. The Family Values Party. You know, the good God-fearing Christian kind. State Representative Bob Nichols. Republican from Cheyenne, Wyoming. State representative. Did you see this?
No, I didn't. Right. It is pretty sickening.
So here's the guy, 54-year-old state representative from Wyoming. They're on vacation down in Boca Grande, Florida, from Wyoming. He's arrested for kicking and punching his 19-year-old mentally disabled son. The story reads like this. Lee County Sheriff's Office contacted Nicholas about 2 hours after the incident in a hotel room where his son was staying. A sergeant reported a small blood stain on the bedspread in the room and observed the victim had redness and welts around his neck and a foot-sized abrasion on the skin around his left rib cage that appeared to have a shoelace pattern on it. Turns out that the witnesses there saw him kicking and punching this 19-year-old kid. In fact, kicked him more than five times, punched him with a closed fist, this kid who has autism, mentally disabled kid. So our big God-fearing Christian says, well, I'm not going to resign because the boy was misbehaving. Sure, he's got that autism thingy, but he was combative during lunch, and he needed himself some corporal punishment. And he says, I got no intention of resigning because I don't think I committed a crime, so why would I? If he doesn't think punching this kid in public and kicking him while he's down on the street is not a crime, one, do we want him as a state rep? But two, and more importantly, do you want him looking after anyone, his child, your child, anyone. But, you know, witnesses outside the restaurant said they saw him repeatedly punching this kid with a closed fist and kicking him while he was on the ground. Good God-fearing family man. Mr. Family Values. Let's take a quick break. Right back after this. Sickening.
This is why we fight, why we
for the rest of us. Rick Smith.
That washer or dryer on the fritz, and you don't have the bucks for a new one?
Call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
You say that old refrigerator isn't refrigerating so well.
Call Mike at Klein's, 243-3211.
How about a bunch of money to replace your old stove or microwave?
Again, save the cost of a new one. Just call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Here at the radio station, we call Mike our resident mechanical and electronics genius. Have you ever met someone who can literally fix anything? That's Mike.
Call him at 243-3211.
You'd be amazed to learn how well many of the older appliances were made. A simple repair might give you another 5, 10, or even 20 years of service from that old washer, dryer, stove, or refrigerator at a fraction of the cost of a new one. Mike repairs TVs and electronics, too.
So call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Let Mike fix it right, and you pocket the savings.
That's 243-3211 for Mike at Klein's Appliances Repair Service.
Hey there, fellow working class heroes. I have some great news. You can now get the Rick Smith Show podcast on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or Palm on demand and on the go. Get your class war to go by downloading the Stitcher app on your smartphone by going to Stitcher.com and search for the Rick Smith Show, or go to our website at thericksmithshow.com and click on our Stitcher button. Together we can, and we will, rebuild a prosperous working class and leave opportunity for our children.
For 75 years, AFSCME has protected basic workers' rights. A living wage, health benefits, safe working conditions, these aren't privileges to be taken away, they're rights to be protected. This is Dave Filman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13. Public services and workers' rights are under attack like never before. But the Main Street movement is pulling together. Nurses, firefighters, cops, teachers, students, and neighbors. Ordinary Americans are fighting back and making history. From victories in Wisconsin, Ohio, and right here in Pennsylvania, AFSCME was there. AFSCME will always be there. Coming after workers and their unions, it's a shameful agenda for Wall Street politicians, but AFSCME's been in this fight for 75 years. We're not about to stop now. Join the Main Street Movement at AFSCME13.org.
Exposing GOP hypocrisy. The Rick Smith Show.
Show. Andy sent me an email during the break, kind of breaking down the Cuomo tax thing. He said an article on New York Governor Andrew Cuomo, $1.9 billion tax hike. He says, anemic to me, but better than nothing. Those making between $40,000 and $150,000 pay 6.45%, down from 6.85%. $150,000 to $2 million will see rates decrease, and greater than $2 million, they'll pay from 8.82% up to 8.97%. The top tax rate would have been 6.85% without new legislation. So, according to him, he says it's supposed to be the lowest rate for the middle class, $40,000 to $150,000 in 58 years, but still has a $3.5 billion budget deficit for 2012. And he also wants to thank Jerome. It's great that he was out there in Washington. And, yeah, look, it's great to see everybody out in the street. That's what this is all about, folks. So I don't know if you saw the story out of Wyoming. Another story, not as bad as the idiot kicking the kid in the... Really, what should happen to that guy You know, I think back to my grandfather, and I wonder why the hell nobody on the street grabbed him and smacked him. Because that's what you do to those people. That's what you do to bullies. You grab them by, and you give them a good whack against the back of the head. That's how you make a citizen out of people. You know, I get this thing from a lot of people who think I'm this big pacifist, because I'm basically anti-war. If we need to have a war, we need to have one. But I've yet to find one that I think is, you know, World War II, you had to. The other one's questionable. But interpersonally, you and me, I have got no problem smacking somebody.
Well, what you do in that situation, you go over and you grab him and hope that he takes a swing at you.
Oh, please.
Then you legally, you know, can make a citizen out of him.
Go ahead. Make my day.
You know, just, that's what you're waiting for. What a scumbag. Anyway, Wyoming. Back to Wyoming. Evidently, the chemicals used in the fracking out there in Wyoming, they're claiming has tainted well water for drinking supplies. The Environmental Protection Agency said Thursday night that it discovered high levels of benzene in well water near Pavilion, Wyoming. They're saying most likely from the secret cocktail of chemicals that are injected underground to crack shale rock. You know, we've been hearing a lot of this here locally that, oh, well, you know, it's safe. And we shouldn't be paying attention to it. We shouldn't be regulating it. Oh, you know, those environmental wackos. I was reading the Patriot News blog, which kind of funny. Because they had an article that the EPA has declared fracking, you know, the drilling process fracking, to be a potential source of pollution. They say, look, you know, we're finding this around the country. The more we're pumping this crap underground, the more negative effects are happening to it. It's getting into the drinking water. It's causing problems. Now, they're not saying shut it down completely and don't do it. But if you look around the country and you're seeing not only the pollution of the water, not only the tearing up of the land, but also, you know, in some places, some low-level earthquake-type stuff going on. Now, they're not 100% sure, but you look at Arkansas, you look at Ohio, you look at Colorado. When you start pumping things underground under high pressure and you start moving that stuff around, you're going to cause low-level activity. I'm not saying ground-opening earthquakes. No, just those rumbles. So get used to it. You know, if you're going to live near a fracking area, probably going to happen. But the idea that the EPA, how dare they, say that the process could be dangerous and the process could cause pollution, according to the people here on the Penn Live comments section, well, the EPA is just a bunch of liberal wackos. They want to destroy industry. And I say, no. I said the EPA has a very specific charge, and that charge is to make sure that the air we breathe is clean and the water we drink is pure and that we have sane, rational regulation. Now, the Republicans, there's no such thing as a sane, rational regulation. And they love throwing out there, oh, the liberals want you to believe that we want you to drink dirty water and breathe crummy air. Yeah, I think I'm kind of saying that. Remember, I grew up in Cleveland, home of the Clean Water Act. It were the big business people. It were the people who paid mouthpieces like the right-wing talkers who are out there pushing this frame that, oh, people think they want us to drink dirty water. Yeah, they want me to drink dirty water in my neighborhood because they don't live in my neighborhood. They don't do this stuff in their backyards. They do it in ours. So when I go back and I look at, you know, when I was a kid, you couldn't go anywhere near Lake Erie. In fact, nothing lived in Lake Erie. Everything was dead because we allowed the steel industry to pollute as much as they wanted. Go ahead, dump all that stuff in there. Don't worry about it. We were business friendly. And I look at history. Today, on this date, 1921, a guy named Thomas Midgley, young engineer at General Motors, he discovered that if you added lead to gasoline, it would stop the engine from knocking and pinging. Because understand, you know, when you would put the gasoline in, it had a much higher octane level, and boy, it would fire like crazy, and all those metal parts would be in there clanging and banging around, and it was Well, how are you going to sell a car when it's bang, 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 bang? How are you going to do that? You want it to run nice and smooth and purr. So they came up with this idea that, hey, well, if we put this, because they tried everything. They tried absolutely every compound they could possibly think of to add to gasoline to stop the knocking and the pinging. And they came across tetraethyl lead, or T-E-L. I'm sure you've seen it, T-E-L. So they came across that, and they said, wow, this is great. We're going to be able to do this. They also came across a couple of other things. They came across iodine, for instance, which worked well, but was kind of complicated to refine and would have been much more expensive to use. And they came across ethyl alcohol, which worked as well, but it was cheap. And they thought that, you know, the average idiot could make his own at home, cook it up in the still. So kind of like the story with porridge. Iodine was too expensive. Ethyl alcohol was too cheap. But lead was just right. And what's kind of funny, you look at what happened the day they sold their first tank full of this leaded gasoline, which was in February of 1923. They're in Dayton, Ohio, at a filling station. They proudly pulled up their car, and they filled up with this leaded gasoline. The only problem is Mr. Midgley, the guy who invented it, he was in bed. Yeah, you know the punchline. He was in bed. Why? Lead poisoning. Severe lead poisoning.
Ooh.
And, you know, he recovered. He did all right. But April 1924... lead poisoning killed two of his colleagues. And in October, five other workers at the plant died as well. So you had all these people, you know, dying because of it. But, you know, that wasn't, you know, we needed to make sure we had this cheap, reliable lead to make the engine sound better. And one reporter said that, you know, when they saw the people, people had retching fits of violent insanity. Lead poisoning. They said almost 40 people at the plant suffered severe neurological symptoms like hallucinations and seizures. And you know what I love about this whole thing? And this is history.com telling the story. They wrote, iodine worked, but producing it was much too complicated. Ethyl alcohol also worked, and it was cheap. However, anyone with an ordinary still could make it, which meant the GM could not patent it and profit from it. Thus, from a corporate point of view, lead was the best anti-knock additive that there was. From a corporate point of view. So like I said, like porridge, iodine too expensive, ethyl alcohol too cheap. Hey, we got this. It's easy to refine. You can't get it easily, and we can make you buy it. And look what it did to our environment. Look what it did to the children. Look what it did to our society. Why? Because General Motors, they could profit from it. And you go, Rick, well, that was in the past. That was in the 20s and the 30s. Oh, it was so long ago. No, it was actually in the 70s that they finally got the lead out of the gasoline. But it was 50 years until we did. And how much damage was done? So when I look at the EPA and you go, well, why this long story? The long story is pretty simple. When you look at what the EPA is supposed to do, they're supposed to look at, is this going to be the next lead product? Is this fracking going to do to our environment and our country what coal did during the past century? And how do we mitigate those risks? And do it in a way where, yeah, you can still perform your business, but Rick Smith is not going to die of lead poisoning or is not going to die of black lung or any of the other negative effects of things that have gone on in the past. It's looking at being proactive instead of reactive. And I want an EPA to do that. I don't want the person who's inspecting the site to go, well, you know, if I shut down this mine or this drilling site, at the point, it's going to cost the company an awful lot of money. Yeah, those kids over there will get sick, but it's going to cost the company money. I don't think I want that inspector working on that job. Just a thought. But interesting with the lead. I thought it was an interesting story, and, you know, it goes to show the corporate mentality and where we put our values. And the question I asked from the beginning, I knew this years ago, this story years and years ago. My question was always, why did the government do nothing? And you go, oh, that's right. We didn't have an environmental protection agency. Now think about what the Republicans want to do. The job killing, now understand what she said, Michelle Bachmann, the job killing EPA.
There is no other agency like the EPA. It should really be renamed the Job Killing Organization of America.
So you go back and you think about this leaded gasoline, 50 plus years till we can get the lead out. Why? No EPA. That's why they want to destroy it. That's why they want to take us back to the good old days. And you want us to go back there. Please, please don't vote for them. Back after this.
To the Rick Smith Show.
The 19th century saw regular work weeks of 70 hours or more. Many attempts were made to get legislatures across the country to pass maximum hour laws limiting the number of hours an employee could be compelled to labor. The first union victory in capping work hours was won by the building trades in 1840. They won a 60-hour week. In 1874, the state of Massachusetts became the first to pass a law mandating a maximum hours for women. Other states followed as union activists around the country fought to pass laws to protect workers. Their work stalled in 1905 when the U.S. Supreme Court ruled the New York Bake Shop Act unconstitutional, citing a sacred bond between master and employee and the liberty of contract. With this decision, the Lochner era, named after bakery owner Joseph Lochner, who had been cited, tried, and convicted of working employees beyond the 60-hour limit, began. This single decision opened the floodgates, allowing attacks on child labor laws, minimum wage laws, as well as maximum hour laws by corporate and anti-union interests. Only after President Franklin Delano Roosevelt threatened to enlarge the United States Supreme Court from 9 to 13 did the court do an about-face with regard to liberty of contract and what has been called a switch in time to save 9, ruling in West Coast Hotel versus Parrish that Elsie Parrish was indeed entitled to the state of Washington's minimum wage, regardless of what conditions she agreed to, marking the end of the Lochner era. FDR's New Deal policies helped workers reclaim lost ground in their fight for the American dream. The proposal and passage of the Fair Labor Standards Act, federally restricting weekly hours, mandating overtime pay, setting a minimum wage, and restricting the exploitative use of child labor, was an essential step forward for workers, families, and communities. This Rick Smith Show Labor History Moment was made possible by a grant from the Labor Education Center of IUP. For more information, visit www.therickSmithShow.com.
Not right wing, just right. The Rick Smith Show.
We found a better way of making it seem clean. We built an electronic voting machine, and then we sold these suckers nationwide. But we're the only ones who know what's on the inside. You push the buttons and our voting machine keeps track. We made it so it's very easy to hack. Call for a recount, it will probably fail, but our machines don't leave no paper trail.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. We're going to check out the website at therickSmithShow.com. If you missed anything, any portion of the program, there's the podcast there for your entertainment enjoyment. If you've got a smartphone, Stitcher. Take the program on the go. What do you got for us tonight, Jake?
All right, thanks, Rick. Tomorrow, New York City, there's a coalition of labor, civil rights, and community organizations that are going to be celebrating International Human Rights Day. And they're going to be focusing on what has been happening in this country, and it's very troubling. I think what's happening as far as voter suppression really is very odious and destructive. I think it really does present a real threat to our representative democracy. What they're talking about are the laws that have been passed this year in Wisconsin and Michigan, the ones that were recently repealed in Ohio, the ballot initiatives, the voter suppression measures that are based on legislation modeled by the something that we talked about quite a few times, ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council, which is a right-wing think tank and funded by the Koch brothers. Two-thirds of the state legislatures this year have introduced laws that undermine the rights to vote. Let me repeat that. Two-thirds, unbelievably, two-thirds of the state legislatures in this country have introduced laws that undermine the right to vote. It also undermines early voting. Sunday voting are also under attack. Voter ID requirements will introduce the first financial and documented barriers to voting since the poll tax, and racially motivated bans on ex-felons will wipe tens of thousands off the rolls. This effort is unprecedented. It is coordinated and is targeting African Americans, Latinos, Asian Americans, Native American students, working women, seniors, and immigrants of all colors will be disproportionately affected. And I think this issue has to be met head on. It is obviously a concerted effort top to bottom in the Republican Party. They realize that if they can cut into that huge voter turnout of 2008, they have a shot in 2012. Locally, Representative Ron Buxton has come out, and I have to be honest, I had heard some rumors for several years that perhaps because of his health, he might decide to step down, and I haven't heard anything for, oh, maybe 6 months or a year. Lo and behold, this month he came out with the announcement that, in fact, after 2012, he will no longer be a member of the State House. He had been a member since 1993. Patty Kim had come out. Patty Kim is a member of the Harrisburg City Council. She had come out and said she is running. She had been someone who had complained about the performance of Ron Buxton and about Jeff Pakola, Senator Pakola, during this whole takeover mess. I have to say, in his defense, Ron Buxton, when it came to defending workers, when it came to sticking up for unions and sticking up for working people, I think he was as fine a state rep in the last 20 years as you will find. And I think this area, the Harrisburg-Steelton area, is going to miss him, and I wish him well. 1% senators have blocked the consumer protections for the rest of us. The obstructionists in the Senate blocked 2 days ago an up-and-down vote on the nomination of Richard Cordray to head the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. 53 senators voted for Cordray, while 45 all Republicans voted against ending debate on this nomination. The one senator, Republican, who voted for him, again, Scott Brown, he's in a tough race. He comes from a pretty progressive state of Massachusetts. And Maine Senator Olympia Snowe, who voted present, and by the way, when the vote came up prior to this, on whether to have a Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, she voted yes. So apparently she's getting a lot of pressure from the Republicans to vote present. Once again, until they get a chairman passed, that bureau cannot provide any protection for American consumers. And once again, the Republicans turn their back on working people of this country. Back to you, Rick.
All righty. Well, you know, it's one of those things. You know, when they want no oversight. They want nobody in charge. They want the free market. The invisible man. The invisible hand. Oh, boy. Looking forward to the weekend. It is week number 2 in my basketball coaching career. 1-1 last week. One win, one loss. We're going to play the same two teams, only opposite this week. We will see how we do.
Did you win last week?
One game, yes. I think I just said 1-1, lost one.
I didn't catch that. So okay, so you are 1-1.
1-1. One team. I coach two teams. The first team lost. Second team won. Now we're going to play the same exact two teams, only in reverse. My team one will play the other team's two, and my team two will play the other team's one.
Well,
instead of
You never know what life brings you. You might have started a new career.
No. It's fun watching my daughter experience basketball for the first time. It's fun watching the the team coming together. Not something I want to do for a living.
That has to be a tough job. I'm sure some of those girls probably never played basketball before.
Not organized. And, look at my daughter. This is the first time she's really touched a basketball. And a lot of the girls are like that. It started off where it was going to be 10, and then by the end of it, I had 16. And then they broke it into two teams, and nobody else wanted to.
And invariably, that's what happened to parents of the kids who were there. I came from a small town, and since you brought it up.
I did.
And we have a minute or two. I came from a small town where we had midgets, and I was lucky.
You had midgets in your town?
Midget baseball. Midget baseball was.
What's that got to do with basketball?
8 to 12. Well, this is the point.
Okay,
you brought
is.
Up the fact that, for the most part, you have parents. I came from a small town. I was lucky.
All the kids have parents.
No. They had the same coaches there that stayed for 10, 15 years, and actually they were very good. So I feel fortunate. When you start out at that level, many times the coaching just comes from the parents, and that may be good, maybe not good, but I was fortunate to have somebody who was very good at it and stayed there not because their child was playing, but because they enjoyed coaching baseball.
Well, I coach my kids because I don't want crazy people coaching them. I'll be honest about it. You look at the Sandusky thing. You think about that. I don't want some kid touching around my kid.
I mean, here's the thing. You don't know. If your daughter, you were a decent athlete. If your daughter inherits your athletic ability, she'll be fairly tall. Who knows? She might be able to get a scholarship. I don't think Dad would have an objection to saving money, would he?
No, that's furthest from my mind. Right now, it's about her having fun, learning to play the game, learning to be part of a team, learning those big concepts. If down the road she chooses to pursue it, that's up to her. But, mm-hmm. It's fun. It's fun doing this now. And that's the reason that I do it. And look, I understand people are busy. I work here 12, 14 hours every day. We find time. It's important. She's going to be 9 exactly once.
Do you have practices?
Every Monday and Wednesday night. I rush back here.
Wow.
It's an hour and a half practice. We rush back here to get right on the air and. But I'm looking forward to tomorrow. I'm going to see how we had a good week of practice. The girls, we'll see.
Teaches you patience, doesn't it?
More than I thought. And I'm generally fairly patient. But when you've got 16, 9, 10-year-old girls running at the mouth, it's.
You have 16 girls in your team?
Yeah, I coach two teams. I thought I just said that.
Oh,
started off,
okay.
There was 10, and then it went up to 16, and they split it in two.
Okay.
So there wasn't a second coach, so I am now coaching both teams. So good for me, huh? Sucker.
Wow.
it is one of those things, And I enjoy it. And we'll see how things go. I'm looking forward to the weekend. Here's a funny story. Next time you're at a Walmart, see a woman walking around with beakers. Could be she's setting up her own meth lab inside a Walmart. Woman in Tulsa, Oklahoma, was arrested yesterday for doing just that. And I watched the video that the news station put on about this 45-year-old woman. Her name's Half Moon. Let me figure that out. She actually was trying to manufacture methamphetamine right there in the store because she claimed that she was too broke to buy the chemicals. So she figured she would just, mix them up there in the store. She was arrested. A cop was taken to the hospital for acid burns on his hands because, used starter fluid. Oh, man. But, the times are tough. But then they cut to this woman who was crying. That there was somebody in the store that she didn't see, literally crying that this is a family store. And I'm going, why are you crying? Stop it. Stop it. Anyway, I hope everyone has a great weekend. Again, if you missed any portion of the program, thericksmithshow.com, best place to get it. Also, if you have a smartphone, the Stitcher app, right there at our site as well. You can email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. I do answer all emails personally. I hope you have a great weekend. I'm looking forward to it. We're going to be in Scranton on Saturday as well, to be giving out the Izzy's. So it'll be interesting to see how that goes. Have a great weekend. See you back here.
to The Rick Smith Show. Together, we can make America better. Email rick@therickSmithShow.com or interact with us anytime at therickSmithShow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
It's common like the tide and flood beneath the lunar sway. Imperial, mysterious, and amorous ray. Democracy is coming.
It's the Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.